Stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive! Bit grey today, isn't it?
Well, welcome everyone to another edition of The Deepest Law. I'm here. How are you doing this week, Mr. D?
A wizard is never early, nor is he late. He arrives just when he means to. I'm good.
You know, it strikes me that something happened after I finished my book that the month of February kind of threw off my schedule in major ways, all over the place. So the month of March, D, is going to be when I put this show back on the road properly. Deepest Law, Cigar Stream, the whole lot. We're going to get back to my January plans, and this stream is going to be the start of it. How do you feel about that?
Make AA great again. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. So. Okay. Now, when we're not quite sure what to do on this show, we go into D has got like you know in Mary Poppins how Mary Poppins has that bag, and she can just pull out like endless things from that bag. You have a folder of public films that is a bit like that. Because we, I don't know, probably about 2 years ago at this point, we had like one of these shows where we watch public films. And we've literally just been living off the fumes of that for ages at this point. We never run out of them, do we?
No, I mean, I have literally like a 2 terabyte hard drive full of public domain ephemeral, what they call ephemeral films. You know, because I'm a big fanatic. I love, you know, the kind of cultural and, you know, sociological mores that are evident in times past. And I'm a quite a big 1950s, you know, admirer. So, I've got tons of it. And the thing is, of course, it makes very entertaining content and it's very easy. So.
Yeah, but I also feel that this kind of in situ analysis that we do, we stumble upon things that we'd never otherwise think about or talk about. That's why I feel like I feel like some of these streams have been actually quite thought provoking in places, you know.
Especially they all have, yeah.
Especially some of those ones where we're looking at like the messaging that they were giving the American public after the Second World War, where you can clearly see like global homo talking points like 1951 and things like that.
And it's funny because going back and rewatching these, you know. Since thinking about things in a slightly different way, you know, I mean, partially courtesy of your, you know, your intellectual example, I've actually seen things in these films that I didn't see before. You know, I'm thinking about them in a very different way as well, because you see it, you know, in it, like most of them, you know, you see the seeds of all of the things that we've come to hate. You see the kind of beginning of this kind, you know, this sort of mass messaging and this kind of priming it's quite terrifying in a way.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that struck me when I was writing and researching Prophets of Doom D was Arnold Toynbee was probably the world's most famous historian in the 1950s, certainly was in the 1940s. He kind of peaked in around like early 50s. And obviously, Toynbee was predicting, you know, he was a prophet of doom. He was saying, like, you know, there are these civilizational cycles and the trajectory we're on, you know, there's going to be a lot of shit down the pike. And all of this material progress people keep on pointing to almost is a false signal. And, you know, all of the, and he was just pointing to all of the things that we've come to see. And But he was like watching the attacks on him. They were all coming from a place of, we actually love our country and we think the future is going to be great. So shut up, Arnold, you know. And the counter argument was always, you just hate this country, Toynbee. You're not patriotic enough. Actually, like, you should have faith that your country is going to be fantastic. That kind of attitude of almost like unlimited optimism that Toynbee was met with, I think is something that I've come to retrospectively see, especially in the 1950s. There's this kind of attitude that, you know, we're going to march into the future and nothing's going to go wrong. And that anybody who says otherwise is a pariah type thing. And I think now, from the vantage point of 2023, we can kind of look back and see how, like, wrongheaded some of those assessments were of the optimists, I suppose. Mm.
Yes, yeah, so it's also very interesting how we now see this weird attempt by, I mean, certainly in America, well, they do it in Britain as well. I mean, we saw the kind of where Boris Johnson tried to kind of revive World War II and like slightly post-World War II kind of British, you know, let's all pull together for the national cause. Like, but yet deployed for like the kind of worst reasons, you know, COVID hysteria. And in America, I mean, the Democrats are kind of trying to do the same weird thing. You know, you know, we love America, rah, 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 you know, love it or leave it. You know, if you've got to get behind us on, except it's all like, you know, support Ukraine, or you're like a communist Russian, you know, it's like a weird replay of the 1950s, except like completely inverted.
Yeah, I mean, I put out a tweet the other day, which, you know, sometimes you put out a tweet and it just does gangbusters, you know, gets like, I mean, this one got over 1,000 likes. I consider that, for us, that's a good tweet, right? For Aaron McIntyre, it's just any tweet, right? But for us, if a tweet does over 1,000 likes, that's, you know, that's a banger type thing. And did you see that there was that bloody Ukraine protest by the what were they called, the donkeys or something, led by donkeys? God. And Emily Thornberry, who's this kind of, you know, rotund Labour politician, essentially
Labour, you know, swag,
she's kind of typical like Islington pseudo lesbian, essentially, who is the shadow attorney general, God help us. She replied to the tweet showing that and said, made me cry. And then I quote tweeted that and said, Britain was a country once. Now it's just a shambling mass of womanhood crying at awful astroturfed, agit-propped for a corrupt shithole in Eastern Europe as sub-80 IQ proles beg around for a single carrot in Asda. I hate you so much, okay? And, you know, Germany was quite well received in our type of circles, but couldn't help but notice that certain Tory boys were in my replies, basically saying, like, if you don't like it, you can just leave type thing.
Oh, for God.
And I'm just like, I mean, what sort of response is that? I mean, you're basically kind of sidestepping. It's the same tactic they used on Toynbee, like, you know, 70 years ago. It's not that I hate the country. I hate what it's becoming. I hate what it's become. And I'd like it to be otherwise. But the response is, oh, well, you know, if you criticize the way things are, now you're not a patriot for some reason.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you should be deported or something. It's very odd. Anyway.
It's very odd. In fact, I will say that it's actually much worse than it was. I mean, people have this. I love sometimes to talk about the 1950s because I think people have this completely media-generated image of the 1950s that is just basically a giant cliche that really doesn't reflect the reality of what was going on in either Britain or America. But I would say things are worse. You know, I would say that, you know, we have this idea that, you know, the 1950s was this terribly repressive decade where, you know, any kind of dissent towards any official line, you know, would be met with, you know, kind of being ostracized or worse. But it's not true. You know, I think that's much more the case today than it was then. You know, you were at least allowed to have like policy differences then. You can't even have that now.
I mean, think about the logic of the Tory boy. Like, what's he doing there? He's essentially low-key defending Emily Thornberry. It's like, what's he doing? I mean, they'd rather try to have like one up on people from our side of things than clearly call out the fact that, you know, somebody like Emily Thornberry should have nothing to do with politics whatsoever. I mean, in any sane, normal country, someone like Emily Thornberry would be, I don't know, at best running a school somewhere.
Yeah, working at a transport calf or something, you know. cooking eggs, that's what she's...
Anyway, just before we get going here, I'll remind people I need to pay the bills, so please do buy courses at the academic agency, especially the Trivium or the Mega Bundle. They're the best ones to get, but other courses are available. At some point when my kind of post book haze lull, I've been in a kind of dream world for the past month. But anyway, when I wake up again, I might do a literature course. Skeptical Waves has offered to help me try to recover my old lectures. So if I could find those, I could do a literature course very easily. But also at some point very soon, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to finally do the Jordan Peterson rewrite it as a special one-off stream as a kind of long advert for Foundations of Writing, rewriting the Conservative Manifesto by Jordan Peterson, one of the worst pieces of writing I've ever read in my entire life.
I mean, good luck to you, because that it's oh.
So yeah, that anything you'd like to plug, Dee, before we
Herculean task. Not really. I don't think I'm doing anything.
Spaces. I mean, doing...
you can check out. I do these Twitter Spaces occasionally. Maybe we'll do one. Who knows? So look for that on Twitter. Also, if people, I actually did a stream with Red Hawk on last Thursday. So if people want to go to Red Hawk's channel and
I hope it was better than the stream I did with Red Hawk's make last week.
Oh, it certainly was, because of course I was on it. It was good. And I like Red Hawk, and he's an interesting chap and more handsome than I thought he would be, by the way. Never seen him before, but
With respect to Ryan, I mean objectively speaking, he was not well received. I'll just say that by the crowd, which can be a bit rough if you've never been on the channel before. But you know, going into the stream, he was worried about his fans behaving, but I was quietly thinking,
yeah,
do you know what my fans are like?
You don't know what you're in for, mate.
I tell you what, though, there were some weird defenders of that stream. Like Ian Duke came in saying, "Oh, I thought this was a great guest and a great stream," and
yeah,
Charlie liked it and things like that. So
yeah, but Charlie liked it because what would I say? Big Spurg energy. Yeah,
I will say that. Do you remember we did a stream once ranking the first 75 cigar streams over on AA Gold? At some point, I want to do ranking streams of all the Deepest Lores and all the cigar streams, where we put them in, S tier, A tier. I want to do that at some point on AA Gold when I get a chance.
That should be fun.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll never do it because we never.
We never do anything. I'm trying to use AA Gold a bit more now that I've got time again. Until something comes along to gobble my time again.
You've got the women thing.
Yeah, but who would you do? We'll finish, and then there'll be like a 2-month gap where I can use that space for something else. You know.
Ah, okay. Maybe we can finish those Ashes commentaries.
Yeah, indeed.
God's sake.
Anyway, shall we make a start, Dee, with the with the videos?
That's right, videos.
Yes, we're not
doing,
just here to idly chatter. We're watching. The first one is called Buying Food.
Buying food.
Do we want us there, or should we just get rid of us?
I don't think we need us, do we? Hang on.
No, let's get rid of us. But are you doing that thing where we're, you know, starting on three?
Oh my God. Hang on. Okay. Boy, that was.
Yeah, exactly, Mr. Bloke. It will function as a guide to all of the. Because, you know, coming into the channel now, D, right, you're faced with basically like a mountain. It's like, I don't know. Do you remember when Mark said he thought Bob Dylan was black, right?
What? No, I never. I didn't.
Mark, so uncultured. He thought that Bob Dylan was black. But can you imagine being Mark and facing like the enormous mountain of Bob Dylan's work and thinking, oh, how do I get into him? You know?
Yeah.
Somebody coming to the channel now faces that kind of. You've just got these hundreds and hundreds of streams and videos and things. So,
And they think we're black. Yeah.
And you know, they think certainly they think I'm black. So that we are. let's not get into the etymology of Iran yet again.
No. All right. Buying food, because none of us know how to buy food. And so we need a film to tell us how to buy food. This is an American film. From 1950. So
in 1950, they had public information films on how to buy food. Brilliant. Okay. On 3D, okay? Three, right. Two, one, and go.
Oh, look at the hammer and sickle in that eye. Beware.
Yeah. Was that a communist symbol there?
I don't know what that was.
From the University of Kansas. I don't know much about them. Professor
Edna A. Hill. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Centron Corporation. Lawrence, Kansas.
The American housewife. Who has a more important, a more responsible occupation?
I'm sorry, wife, but already mother, it's a better world. Take you on a walk down that street.
Yeah, she's a housewife. There's nothing to be ashamed of. It's the most important role.
Look at this picture of order.
If her income is limited, and most incomes are, it is her duty to be sure that what she has to spend buys the most in healthful, nutritious food for her family.
Word.
Yes, she feels that she must buy wisely.
Sorry, Dave.
But just what does this mean? What can she do
trying to
be
recognize
sure
any
her
of these
money
products.
Goes as far as possible?
Where's the Campbell's soup?
One of the first things she can do is just what this young lady is doing. Shopping from a grocery list.
Okay.
Using the list tends to eliminate so-called impulse buying, which is a great waster of housewives' funds. What is impulse buying?
So that's their tip, is it? Make a shopping list.
Henry he's frequently guilty of it. Henry's going to pick up something for dinner.
Uh-oh.
His wife
Henry.
Didn't tell him what to get. Anything that looks good, she said. Henry's been working hard all day and he's hungry. What's more, he's hungry for something different, getting tired of the same old things all the time. That's it. That's what he's hungry for, oysters. So Henry takes not one, not two, but three pints of oysters.
Bloody hell.
The way he feels right now, he could eat all of them by himself.
Based.
Three.
He and his wife don't often eat cake. Neither of them care much for it. But tonight, Henry's really hungry.
All right, is Henry an extremely young Robert Duvall? No.
Would.
kind of from the side, he looks a bit Robert Duvall-like. But...
Yeah, I like that shot from
Henry
below.
Henry ought to have some vegetables, good diet, and all that, you know. What's this? Henry's never seen anything like this before.
It's sweet.
Looks good, so he'll take two.
I seem to recall, by the way, Robert Duvall trivia, D, his first role was in... He played the character
yes,
Boo Radley, I believe, in To
of
Kill a Mockingbird.
But how is impulse buying wasted?
Oh. Okay.
When Henry finished dinner that evening, he was sure he wouldn't be able to eat another oyster for a long, long time. And almost two of the 3 pints that Henry bought will have to be thrown away.
3 pints of oysters.
Neither Henry nor his wife cared for the new vegetable. Most of what he bought will go to waste.
So they didn't like Swedes.
Henry and his wife tired of the cake long before it was eaten.
Oh,
what?
No.
What are you doing, woman?
Henry found
why,
out
why didn't
about
they just
impulse
freeze
buying
the oysters?
The hard way.
Oh. Also, I like the bowling. Did you see the bowling pin?
Which are not economical
yeah.
for the family.
Salt and pepper shaker. Yeah.
Here are two different size cans of the same product.
Can I just say something, D? Right.
Can contain
yeah.
16 ounces.
Yesterday, I was in a theme park and I watched this Eastern European woman cuss out her British husband
yeah.
right in front of everybody.
Yeah, I
right.
heard about that.
All he had done, his transgression was just he didn't want to go on the ride at the end of the day. This dude
the answer depends
bought
entirely upon
and
the situation.
Ate 3 pints
if
of oysters
requirements of the family are
and
enough,
felt sick,
the
and his wife just kind of
nearby.
Tended
because
to him. She didn't like cuss
exactly
him out or shout at him or. Do you notice that?
Be, look at him. Look at all these children. Can you imagine?
But if the family is small, the small can may be the better buy, since part of the large can would probably have been wasted. The right answer depends upon the requirements of the purchaser.
I do have to wonder about the target audience, dealer. Who is stupid enough to not
sometimes
know this stuff?
Substantial savings can be affected by
buying I would suppose these are the children. I would think they would look like school children.
But this presents a storage problem that some people may not be able to solve. It's wise to be sure the food is
people
well
in the chat are like
everyone.
Now hungry for oysters.
You buy too much of
oysters.
It.
To be fair, I always like an oyster.
Obviously, highly perishable foods are not suitable for quantity buying because they spoil too quickly. When buying canned goods, be sure to read the label.
Okay.
The information on the label is much more reliable
heavy
than the flowery
syrup.
Language of advertisements. Some labels are of the descriptive type that you see here, giving the buyer some description of what is to be found in the can.
Okay.
Lima bean. Okay. Pineapple. Yeah. Good.
Other labels carry a letter grade, which indicates the characteristics of the contents. The meanings of the letters vary with the type of food.
Okay.
Usually,
grade C.
Grade A indicates a fancier product.
All right.
Okay.
Why do you ever put
they
that
don't have,
on?
Well, they don't have them anymore. They only, yeah, they got rid. You don't ever say C like grade C and grade B in America anymore. They've changed it to like A and AA and AAA because they wanted them all to sound good, you know.
And which is grade C?
It's also difficult to tell when it's in black and white and covered with scratches, you know.
I mean, there is an unofficial version of this country where it's just like, you know, taste the different range, Tesco stripey, you know. You kind of know what the grade A and B and C is.
What are these eggs? Oh, no, they're peaches, I suppose.
Of course
you can't.
Grey peaches, I like
it. Taste and degree of ripeness determine the grades of these peaches. The size is of small importance.
Size
thing
is of small importance,
is to read the label. Know what you are
it's
buying
how you use the peaches that can.
You buy.
So we've now learned to look at the label.
You could buy one
right.
kind of food, dried, canned, frozen, or fresh. It will pay you to analyze the situation and decide which is most economical for you.
This is like remedial level stuff, D. I mean, I don't believe it's for kids. I believe they would just aimed it at
fresh.
Genuinely thought the public was this stupid.
This box of strawberries will cost about half
in fairness,
the
they probably
in
are.
Summer when berries are plentiful.
What?
As it will in winter. The season of the year has a tremendous influence on the price of
There's
most
a bus
fruits
driving
and
through my strawberry.
The reason for this great difference in price is the cost of transporting the food from a warm
train
climate where it can be grown in winter to the market.
I've noticed, by the way, that is no longer the case. There's no real price difference when you buy strawberries at any time of year anymore.
No.
Same all year round, right?
Yeah, a lot of this is, yes. I mean, this was back, you know, all the kind of organic hipsters should love, you know, should have loved this because it was, again, all season. Everything was seasonal, you know.
You may find that you can save money by doing your own preservation of foods.
There you go. See, it is. This is like trad lifestyle hipster now. You know, everyone's canning.
Of course, in this day and age, with a homosexual youth, she would have to open the jars for the boys, for the men.
Yeah, I mean, look at her. She's,
because you know they wouldn't be able to open the jars themselves.
No, absolutely not. Do you think Columba could open a jar? No.
Well, they're too busy looking at that bloody Greek. tomboy girl on top.
There are various meats available to the housewife, ranging from the most tender, most expensive
Eudomeneus. She's going to get the oysters. Oh my God, steak.
The equally nutritious but less tender portions of the animal, which are sometimes ground or chopped.
Mint.
Yeah, why don't they call it ground rather than mint in America?
Becomes highly important.
I don't know. Put the entire piece of butter in there. Good.
Steak. Looks nice.
Yeah. But the I mean, of an you know, accomplished cook is the one gray, but... Even tasty dish made from ooh, look at that.
Hamburger.
Hamburgers.
Hamburgers. Look at this. They're like round hamburgers.
This is making me really hungry, by the way.
I know. Why would we always do this?
Stew is a dish a housewife can be proud to set before her family.
The very generous value
of
meat
varies little with price. The desirability and small proportion of the tender cuts causes them to be priced higher. Milk is an important part of every good diet.
Yeah.
But your attempts to economize on it may have disastrous.
Of course, milk is white supremacist nowadays. Remember? Milk available
to you. Listen to this. Don't try to economize. They're telling you to drink all the milk you can. This film is great. I like it.
Now let's review the important rules for buying wisely. Shop from a grocery list to avoid impulse buying.
All right.
Decide upon the most economical quantity for your family.
Okay.
Check in your local market as to which form of food is the most economical for you.
Okay.
Purchase fruits and vegetables in season whenever possible.
Exactly, yes. That's
a good tip.
Yeah. Your own food and they're much more tasty, and yes, preserving is easy
exercise
and fun.
Exercise your skill and ingenuity in preparing tasty and healthy
skinless wieners.
I know a lot of skinless wieners.
That's the American variety, you know. Help you to buy snip. Wisely
and stay within your food budget.
Look, it's a comic eagle, look. Hammer
yeah,
and sickle.
There's definitely beware. A little cunning comic eagle thing in there. Well, I learned absolutely nothing from that.
I learned nothing except that even scratched grey 70-year-old pictures of food make me hungry.
I'm starving. All I've got here, D, is bananas. Do you think I could sneak
bananas?
Yeah,
oh,
I've got shit. I'm just living as a chimp. I read somewhere that you can just get by living on bananas. Sorry, I'm trying it.
No, don't. They've got a huge amount of sugar in them. You'd be better off.
Well,
eating
I've
potatoes.
Eaten three and I'm fucking starving. And it's only 4 o'clock, so you know.
Potatoes.
Okay, so
all right, enough
next,
of that.
Next one.
What's next? The snob? No.
Was the snob was vetoed, wasn't it? Is that right?
No. The snob is good. We should watch the snob.
The snob is allowed?
Well,
this is the
I
snob.
Yeah.
Well, I put it in the Twitter because we tested all of these for copyright clearance as good boys that we are.
We don't really have it. Like, there's not a theme. The theme may emerge, but we don't have one yet.
The snob from 1958 is kosher. So let's go.
Okay, should we do that? I mean, yeah, or if you want to go chronologically, we could go with Design for Dreaming. That's a bit before the snob, is it? No. Anyway, snob. How about that?
Yeah, let's do design for dreaming. Yeah.
All right. Fine. Then
let's
we'll
do snob. Let's do chronological. Chronological.
Okay,
because
so
we're autists.
Okay. We're autists, so that would be 1956
1956.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. They loved that font in that era.
Which one?
This font here.
Oh, that weird, yeah, fanciful.
It's on a lot of the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah. And a lot of those you can identify. Yeah. Okay, ready?
3, 2, 1, and go.
This is mental, by the way.
I dreamt last night the moon was so bright it melted the world away.
The moon melted the world away. There's the solar.
When I saw a prince charming come into my bedroom and say,
okay.
Let me persuade you to come to the place where tomorrow meets today.
Thank you. It sounds very
so an
exciting.
Eyes Wide Shut character.
May I come just as
yeah,
I am?
So you do.
General Motors have invited her.
This is how Mrs. A gets up in the morning.
Maybe they don't, but I don't care. Haven't got a thing.
For a while, she had a morning playlist for AAA where, you know, that really annoying song, Good Morning, Good Morning? She'd have that.
Yeah.
God. Yellow with light.
This is bizarre.
Down it fell, and it landed in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel.
It's also like sort of in verse as well.
Okay. A short hair like that in vogue in 1956. This is,
yeah.
She looks about Audrey Hepburn. Something like that.
I'm a girl who happens to think that a brand new car is better than mink.
Excited?
Delighted. So glad I got invited.
Where do you get taken in your dreams to a car show?
She really wants a General Motors car.
Yeah.
They're all so beautiful, I really don't know, so let me go down, get the load.
You see, look, I mean, this is like pretty hardcore materialism, dude, isn't it?
Yeah.
I want a Corvette.
I want a Corvette. To be fair, I would that Corvette. Yeah, I would take it.
Okay, we'll have the usual two-car garage.
People are saying this was used in an Adam Curtis documentary, D.
I wouldn't be surprised. This is fairly well known, yeah. I mean, this is high production values as well. You know, this, I believe, was a Technicolor.
I'll try it.
Yeah, get in the Buick, darling. I mean, there's a deep schizoid insanity to this. Cadillac.
She is literally being intoxicated by American capitalism. It's quite amazing.
Hey, lady, your apron is showing. Better get her into the kitchen quick.
Can you imagine Julius Evola watching this, too?
And I love that now that she's been through the car show, now we get this completely mental imaginary kitchen.
And you end up in the kitchen baking a cake. But this was a kitchen like none I've seen. Put a card in the slot and onto the screen pops a picture of just how your dish will look.
All right.
All the ingredients you need to cook. No need for the bride to feel tragic. The rest is push-button magic. So
ooh.
Whether you bake or broil or stew, the
do you like that in the kitchen, do that? That rotating filler thing?
I mean, it looks nice, but it would be extraordinarily inconvenient. Look at this oven. The oven is the thing that I think is most odd.
That's an oven.
Yeah, that's the oven. Now she's going to... Oh! Now she's going to flounce around whilst the dinner is being prepared by the robots in the kitchen. You reckon she'd have a chance in Who Would You Do?
No.
No.
I don't think so. This style of vintage doesn't do that well unless it's like literally Audrey Hepburn. So. Mm.
Time for the show. Everybody on stage. It's going to turn out that this is just like an advert for Pfizer, and this is all just a psychotic episode.
And now, a glamorous dancer in a special number, Dance of Tomorrow.
A lot of the chat would though.
Well,
everyone says the future is strange, but I have a feeling some things won't change.
What's this then? She said, everybody thinks the future is strange, but I have a feeling that things won't change. What does she mean? Is she talking about people wanting TNA or something?
Yeah, and then she does her weird...
She was wrong about that as well, though, wasn't she?
El Dorado Town Car by Cadillac.
Ensemble by Christian Dior of Paris.
Oh, it's she's wearing Dior. Amazing.
Buick presents the Sleek Centurion.
Driving Coat by Montesano of New York.
Oldsmobiles, elegant, these aren't production cars either.
It's interesting though that this is like going back to what you were talking about before. This is the exact era that trans, like the quote unquote trans, point to. And it's like, well, hardly embodies traditionalist values. This era.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But I mean, again, it's very important to remember that when you're looking at these things, these are the fantasies of like marketing, you know, people and people in Hollywood who may not be representative of American values. I
don't know. Yeah, Evola says truth is myth is truer than history. This is the myth. This is the myth making of 1956. In my view, what else is it? This is a kind of version of the 50s American dream, is it not?
I don't know. I mean, again, I think it's still as we always know, it's always top down. So this is less, I think, mythologizing the culture rather than someone implanting a vision to try to influence the culture, you know.
It was a visual reference to Metropolis. Fritz Lang.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder. It
really, really does make me think of Metropolis.
So this is the part of the film that I remember seeing lots of clips of this bit where they drive to the future city. So here's your 15-minute city.
Jetsons.
Yeah.
I mean, none of this shit happened, did it?
No.
None of it happened.
Nothing. Nothing.
Not one bit of it happened.
No.
Instead, what we got is an endless influx of, well, let's not stop. Let's stop.
Which, of course, are not present in these.
No, of course not. No, of course not.
You know. Look at what they took from you.
Is that a Ski Electric set?
Yeah, yes, I think basically it is. Yeah, it's
Oh, she's fallen in love with the dude now, with the Fred Astaire dude.
Yeah.
completely bizarre film. Completely bizarre. Okay. So the next one in chronological order is The Snob from 1958.
I think you'll really like this one. This is good.
Okay. So ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, and go.
This is like the academic age of the story.
Okay. There's a party going on. Kind of reminiscent of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf so far. Isn't that?
Expression X to the 9th minus 3 squared.
Did you hear that? Thousands of Zoomers just got suddenly excited, Dee, because she looks a bit like a boy.
Come in.
This is you.
Hi, Mom. Hi.
What, this girl who's just come in?
Yeah, no, the girl.
You're working so late.
Oh, this girl.
On Friday night. This is my last algebra problem. I'll save my history until tomorrow. Sarah, your father and I appreciate the fact that you take your schoolwork seriously. But... well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too? I have a certain amount of homework to do, and I like to get it done on time. But you have the whole weekend. You could go out on Friday night or have somebody in. Like them? Is that what you mean? Having a good time is all I mean. And that's why I talked to Ron's mother the other day. You didn't? Well, I suppose you fixed it so he'd have to invite me over.
Look at it, Dee. The boomers just wanted to be SWATs, and they were being pushed by their evil, evil parents to be more liberal.
I know I could if I wanted to. I don't. I think you should go.
Let it work. Leave her alone.
Be a libertine, darling.
Be so corny. There's nobody over there I want to see. I think I better finish my algebra. Of course, dear. We'll talk about this some other time.
Dark liberal mother. Dark liberal mother, dude. I did kind of look a bit like that. When I was... it's just a bit worrying, actually.
Your friends are certainly a nice bunch, Ron.
Yeah, they're the greatest.
Do you suppose they'd like to help you do something really nice?
What do you mean, Mom?
Well, how about being more friendly to Sarah Inman?
Sarah Inman? Oh, Mom.
No, really, dear, I mean it. Now you could invite Sarah over here next Friday to join us.
Ask Sarah to come over here? Well, gee whiz, why?
gee whiz.
No, I don't particularly want her. Sarah Inman...
Now, Ron, you know we've always said that all of your friends are welcome here at any time.
Well, I know, Mom, but...
Well, it's also frightening how masculine all of these young men are. Compared to, like, if you got a room full of young men today.
So the gang started drifting in here on Friday.
Absolutely.
Nobody needed to be asked, but Sarah never came. She's too high hat for that. She wants a special invitation, and if she gets it, it'll be just one more reason for her to think she's better than anybody else.
Now, look here, Ron. Ooh. Years ago, when you had rheumatic fever, don't you remember who it was who came over?
You know, I love that film Rope by Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
Ron has got the same accent as a lot of the people in Rope.
She's changed since then.
Oh,
it must be like a college, kind of
really
mid-century
changed.
College accent.
Yeah, it's partially that mid-Atlantic accent that Americans at certain stations used to have.
I guess I can ask her to honor us with her presence.
I can't believe the parents are literally trying to corrupt this young girl.
You know,
quite interested in Ron now.
Different problems to different people. And some, well, they just don't quite bring it off without falling down somewhere.
Well, if you ask me, where Sarah fell down was when she went into junior high. When she was in grade school, she was swell. She made good grades and had lots of friends.
I mean, look at his, I mean, even look at his hands, you know, and then look at the hands of, like, your average Zuma male, you know. What happened?
Looking at my own hands, D. Looking at my own hands, D.
Well, you're over there doing algebra. Ron is picking up Coca-Colas like a man.
I don't know. She may cut me dead. She does lots of other people. And I don't think she cares at all.
Mmm.
I really want Sarah not to turn him down.
Her Highness has a new sweater. Ooh, it's luscious. You've got to hand it to Sarah. She certainly has good taste. The way she acts, you'd think nobody else did.
Bully. It's going to happen.
That's an awfully pretty sweater, Sarah.
Based.
Well, don't speak. Were you talking to me? Never mind.
Leave her alone.
Hear nobody, see nobody, talk to nobody. That's Sarah.
Just leave her alone. I don't get it. I don't get what the.
That girl.
You see, every society has its normies, do you? Do you want to impinge?
Oh, see, I want to hang out with a group of lads with, like, really high-waisted trousers and crew cuts.
What's all the excitement?
These are...
The election for next year's student council officer. Bill Tyler made president.
Hey, let's go.
Oh, sure, okay.
I'll see you.
Look, she's not interested in elections either.
Based. Right, populist illusion 1.0.
Oh, that girl. She's just sore because we picked Bill's design for the yearbook cover instead of hers. Let's go to class.
I know you shoot us all out of the kitchen, but I don't mind drying dishes.
Oh my God! Besides, leave her alone.
I wanted to
talk to you. Is this dad?
Yeah.
Father.
You're so quiet during dinner. Something's bothering you. Care to cry on my shoulder?
Daddy, there's nothing to cry about.
Not one little thing.
Don't you want to cry, Sarah?
What the fuck is this? Leave her alone.
It wouldn't do any good.
I'm waiting.
Come on, Sarah, cry.
Oh, all right. You'll think
oh,
I'm
it's
silly.
Awful.
Well, this morning, when I came to class, I was worried about the history test first period. I was going over it in my mind, and somebody spoke to me, Nancy Yeager. I didn't hear what she said, but she looked at me as if she just hated me. I worked hard on the history test, but I flubbed it. I know there are lots of people in there that don't study half as hard as I do, and they come off with the A's. I'm smarter than they are. I know I am.
That's right. That's right. Positive reinforcement, Dad.
Last week, I worked just hours and hours on a design for the yearbook cover. Bill Tyler handed in just a blotchy sketch. I couldn't see anything to it. His design is going to be on the yearbook cover. It isn't fair. This afternoon, Ron from next door called and invited me over Friday night. I had to say yes because Mother's been pressuring me, but I don't want to go.
Based.
Bill Tyler will be there, and I don't like him.
Based.
President of Student Council. All the kids that get by on apple polishing will be there, too, and I don't like them.
Punkin.
God, she's a simmering cauldron of resentment.
I'm sorry you don't like so many people. Friends are important in this world. You should encourage others to make good and not dislike them for it. I think maybe your mother's right.
Very wholesome, Dad.
I think you should go to Ron's get-together this Friday. Oh,
yeah. Try to academic agent. Get out
pushing
there.
Her to go out with Ron.
That's all the dishes. I can clean out the sink.
Okay, Punky.
I think Ron could loosen her up.
Do you know what?
Just one more question. All these people you don't like, aren't they happier than you are?
No! Look, aren't you want to be the miserable prince, not the happy pig. Do you remember
aren't
that?
Aren't they happier than you are?
No, be the miserable prince. It's your destiny, Sarah. Join me!
Now go to the party, Sarah. Go to the party.
You know her name's Sarah, and she said it's not fair. I was waiting for the dad to say, you say that so often, I wonder what your basis of comparison is. which is a labyrinth line, of course.
Yes.
First choice goes to our new president.
Look at him playing up to us. Bill Tyler, same. Big man. Everything he does is too clever. Makes me sick. I'm just as good as he is. No, I'm better. He'll get no playing up from me.
Get some play from me, darling. Yeah, I like the football lunkhead archetype.
It's awesome. She's just like a Machiavellian evil genius, Steve, sitting in the corner, analyzing what's going on.
Boy, I didn't know which is going to wear out first, me or the music.
And notice she's sitting on an upright old-fashioned chair, and he's like flopped down on a modern canvas camp chair.
I'd rather not. Well, you want to sit and talk, then?
I'd rather not. Not with you.
Based.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you mad.
No!
Are you satisfied?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You really froze him out, didn't you?
I don't know what business it is of yours if I don't want to dance.
Well, I think you did want to dance. You wanted to dance, all right, but you just couldn't pass up the chance to be a snob.
Yes.
I don't like the psychoanalysis going on here, Dee. Stop psychoanalyzing Sarah. Leave it be.
Ostracize. Look at all of them.
Why not? What's the matter?
Like monkeys in a cage.
Can I do anything?
Oh, it's Ron.
Oh, Ron! They're so mean and hateful. They don't understand anybody who isn't one of their gang and doesn't do all the silly things they do.
I'll get even one day.
The snob, hurting everyone, herself, her parents, her friends, other people. What makes Sarah act the way she does?
Just leave her to her homework, for God's sake.
Is it cover up for some lack she feels in herself?
Oh.
Can a friend like Ron help her in any way?
Sling
us
a dick,
Ron. Is the group justified in judging everything Sarah does as snobbery?
All she needs.
What do you think?
I think everyone should leave her alone.
What do you think?
I think she should be left alone. Well, that's it. That's the end.
That's it. What do you think?
I think that everybody needs to leave her alone as she goes off and writes a novel tediously breaking down social groups in her school.
The trouble with, what's it called?
Trouble with David Hawkins.
See, I told you. It, I told
which
you
may have
like
been a novel
this.
I wrote.
Yeah, but she's,
in fairness,
she's
I was,
you.
In fairness, I never cried. I never cried or...
Oh, you never ran that. Out and rubbed your face against the tree and
I
cried.
Never really had that kind of feeling of resentment. I just kind of... I've always just hated the gang, the group.
Indeed.
Unlike Sarah, I was kind of friends with everybody. I just kind of secretly hated them.
I mean, to be fair, I do think Sarah had a problem, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that her first problem is, of course, she's a woman. And so even if she has these bookish tendencies, she's she's always going to be emotionally vulnerable, you know.
Indeed, I feel like they used a mixture of psychoanalyzing and emotional blackmail to break her down in that film, and really they should have let her be, and she would have fulfilled her destiny, become like, I don't know,
a childless spinster.
Yeah, maybe she'll end up going out with Ron. Ron's like, I can save her. That's
yeah.
That was Ron in the whole thing. Yeah. I can save her, you know. Okay, so should we make Sarah the cover star?
I'll do a thumbnail for you with a 50s typeface. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Okay. I like Sarah.
Of course you do.
Okay.
By the way, she's still living. The actress, and her surname is Ruben.
Oh no! Right. Okay. I've gone off. I know she was quite. You know, I think Sarah would do well in Who Would You Do as well with the homosexual youth. Because
obviously she's got that. Yeah, she's got that slightly. And see, meanwhile, I mean, the true homosexual, you know, goes for Ron and the football star, and you know, all of them, the people with like actual masculine characteristics, you know, which of course young men don't have anymore. I mean, Sarah is more masculine than any Zoomer male that you can find on Twitter. So,
Sarah could have been my long lost soulmate. We could have just, you know, I could have sat with her and I'd be like, yeah, look now, look at the dynamics. Look at how that girl angled herself towards that chud over there. And we could have like autistically broken down every single aspect, element of that room. She would have fucking loved it. She just didn't have someone on her level to kind of draw out in natural tendencies. That's my claim.
Well, maybe you can find yourself another Sarah.
She had liberal parents though, basically forced her to integrate with the rest of society. Yeah.
Like her weird, creepy father who just like stood in the kitchen and broke her.
To be fair, his advice was quite wholesome. And yeah. I do think, in truth, that I do worry sometimes, Dee, in all seriousness, about how isolated some of the Zoomers are, of how few real life friends they've got, how kind of apart from IRL they are.
Exactly. Private. I mean, just dancing in like the idea of going and dancing in a, you know, in a room and drinking Coca-Cola. You know, they're not going to do that.
I think some of the efforts I've made, you know, the basket weaving or the events and so on, I think that for some Zoomers, that's been a bit of a lease of life for them, encourage them to, you know, get a life, essentially.
Yeah, it does help. It really does help, you know. I mean, even if you're, an introvert like me, still, you know, I need a carefully controlled dose of social interaction, and not just online. It really isn't the same.
No, you need in real life interactions.
Indeed. Yeah.
Although I now claim that I've done my fair share of that.
Oh, and you have. Yeah.
And now I no longer need to do it.
I don't know how you ever survived the last few weeks.
Okay, so
especially that Carl, right. Especially when that Carl fellow came over.
Yes, Carl. I had to be with him all day and all night, and the next morning.
Oh,
and in the car when I gave him a lift back, you know.
Monstrous! You can't even drive.
Exactly.
All right.
All right. Next. next video.
Did we do why vandalism?
No, we skipped that. Should we do that while we're still in the '50s?
Should we?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that.
Okay, so 3, 2, 1, and go.
Oh.
This is vandalism. It is perhaps not too serious. But wherever it happens, vandalism may be the symptom of a sickness in an unfriendly world.
Yeah.
These feelings may not show on the surface. Take Jeff Turner. He doesn't see much love and the care that most people would give to a pet. Is against him. A typical vandal.
Okay.
Every person is different with inner motivations.
See, the dog has saved him.
Often not even known to himself. In Jeff's hidden personality are many scars.
This psychologizing at the end.
Their causes are not easy to understand.
What do you think the psychology of the typical BLM looter is? Do you think they go through these issues?
It's not that the dishes are dirty and the house is messy. It's something much deeper.
Oh my god.
Perhaps the emptiness of a home that is lacking in love and affection.
A lot of people saying, one, he's got a home. It's an actual home. That's what people would be saying now. Okay, he hasn't tidied it up, but...
Look at all the food! Got tons of food. He's got a nice ass.
The complex circumstances which he himself can't fully...
He's got an apple.
Understand.
Yeah, clean your room, bucko.
Even among others of his own age, Jeff often feels left out and uncomfortable.
Three alphas, right.
All right, somebody put him away?
I'll do it.
Oh, all right, Jeff. That's a gain of 3 ounces over the day before yesterday. Can anyone suggest the cause? Wendy?
It could be to the fat in the diet, Mr. Colt.
Yes, it could be. We have to consider that. But what other causes might there be? Jeff?
Kind of sinister, the way he's striking that.
I don't know.
Well, who can think of other causes? Yes?
Well, maybe if they're...
Rightly or wrongly, Jeff has come to feel that everyone is against him.
Except the rabbit.
Outside, Jeff just like any boy on the block.
But see, he can't have, again, that's quite opposite of psychotic, because he wouldn't be able to have emotional relationship with animals, you know. In fact, psychotics tend to hurt animals.
There are others at odds with the world, but for different reasons. Here is Don Cardiff.
Oh.
His focus prodded and nagged at Don until, without knowing it,
it's he nice coat.
Them and himself as well.
Daddy, you forgot your scarf. Your scarf.
Leave him alone, for God's sake. You forgot your testicles. I've taken them from you.
Made worse by the lack of family love and respect.
Why don't you get out then? I'd have more money if
This is a lot of liberal bullshit analysis, Steve.
These are city boys, but theirs is not only a city problem, nor are
city
all
boys.
Involved in vandalism necessarily deeply disturbed. But wherever the natural warmth of human feeling has been turned to resentment by constant lack of affection and understanding, there is danger of vandalism.
Is that the case, though?
No, I don't think so at all. I think this is very...
I think young men just like to smash stuff up sometimes, you know?
Yeah, you know, everyone does. Well, all men do, I think.
These boys are bored.
But you need to break rocks and, you know...
Come on, what are you stalling for? What's the hurry? We ain't going anywhere.
I mean, these are real hardened... criminal hoodlums, you know, with their malted milkshakes.
What's the matter, man? Got too much money? I got $2.
$2?
Maybe we can do something. Let's go to a movie or something. What's playing?
I don't know.
What difference does it make?
Let's do a movie.
Okay, so they're bored.
Yeah.
Okay, I take boredom as a you know, as a legitimate reason.
We can go for a ride.
Can't get nobody to go with us.
But the idea that they're doing it because they're unloved is just bullshit. I'm afraid.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
Like who?
Yeah, these are young men suffering from the domesticity of modernity, you know.
No, I mean, you know, like in the army, like there are loads of people who just sign up for the chance to kill someone, you know. Kind of one of those people. One of those things nobody ever talks about.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, these are young men who just, you know, who need to go out and... Many people are nervous and fidgety. And break things, you know, be violent. Their actions so that they're not destructive. In these boys, feelings of resentment are too great to be what controlled. What is the cottage completely. Burger? That's what I want to know. Even when they themselves are not fully aware
of their feelings. Maybe that's what they call the loos in that place, the cottage.
Do some cottaging in the burger parlor. Yeah.
The people in the chat saying today they'd give them ADHD meds, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. How can vandalism boys, the slow boys club.
Can these boys be persuaded to take part in some community activity in order to help them get rid of boredom?
Well, that's the Sadiq Khan solution. Boys clubs with strong leadership it's gone well, isn't it? Support might win their
interest and keep them off the street. Yeah, working really well. The community has a responsibility here, but so have the boys themselves. They remember Chuck Connors club doesn't mean much if you from that join. Film.
I just want to point out, Dee, that we've had literally 75 years of this utter bullshit at this point, and things have got more violent, there have been more delinquents. Yeah. They've not solved this problem, they've done the opposite, and it's all this, you know, like, oh, send them to a youth club, give them more love and care and all this sort of stuff. It's just bollocks. Teachers and counsellors
can do wonders in making the world seem less cold and hostile. See? Exactly. You need a balding professor in a bow tie
to make
the world less hostile.
Because just use your common sense. This film was made in 1955. Is the society more violent or less violent than 1955? More.
Of right and wrong might steer well, let's just say that there's a whole population of people that isn't shown in these films that may have had something to do with the declining standards and increasing violence in society in that time. Family,
friends, there's community institutions
all play their role in the complex process. See, they could go into confession, go into the church, boys. No, form.
These boys, many unhappy and painful experiences, have come to feel resentful toward everyone.
Say, there's a free movie at the community center tonight.
Those free movies. Yeah. Anyway, it's always too crowded in there.
It's always too crowded in there.
Literally, having a go at free movies.
I love it. Even when the community makes the effort. What was the is it Call of the Wild? What is it? Tonight, fellas?
No, we're kind of busy tonight.
How about a little basketball?
No. You've got plans.
Well, come in anytime.
Yeah, sure, Mr. Brewer.
Yeah. Call of the...
We gotta go and drink more milkshake and stab the bench again.
Pull the stuffing out of the window.
Say, it's open. How about that?
Let's take a look around. It might be fun, huh?
You better not. It'd be too bad if they catch us.
What is that? Is it just like an abandoned gothic mansion in the middle of this town?
It's the element of risk and excitement that is drawing them to this.
Yeah.
Because they're young men.
A guard walking by now might save these boys from doing things they'll be sorry for later. But guards can't solve the real problem. How to keep inner feelings from building up until they...
Ashen Duke says, off to the Moloko milk bar, my troopies.
Yeah, they are very Alex Boy, aren't they, these
lads? Yeah, but... they need the cod pieces and the eyeball jewellery and...
I understand what I'm saying, though. they're not doing this because they're resentful at society. They're just doing it for because it's a bit of danger and it's a bit of excitement and it's a bit of risk taking. And you know, playing basketball without Codra was gay or whatever. That's how they would reason it to themselves.
But in a way, of course, that they—I mean—that is a resentment of society because, of course, this was a society of peak domestication.
Domesticity, you know? Yes. And look, I mean, it doesn't have any real kind of anti-white propaganda, unless you count the psychologizing. It doesn't have all the stuff that people would point to today wasn't there in 1955, and yet they still felt resentful, quote unquote. So. Maybe it's just a feeling in young people. Evola talks about it, the wasp stuck in the jar and they're banging up against the side of the glass. They're kind of dumb. He
likes me, see how he puts his nose. If they hurt the rabbit, I'm out of here.
I hope they don't.
No, he likes the rabbit. He's not gonna let them. Oh, they're in this. They broke in the school. That's where they are.
Oh, okay. I probably flunked.
And everything. Yeah. Well, we can fix that. Yeah, there's no 30 stone black girls pulling each other's hair extensions. There's no urban youth smashing their teacher's head in with a Nintendo Switch.
Somebody's pointing out in the chat that this would be punishable by death in America.
It is
trespassing.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean that's high risk. High risk. Vandalism
usually starts. Yeah. Tear it up. Nothing to be gained. Seems like Fight Club. Yeah.
Destruction has boiled up out of hidden resentments and strikes out blindly against everything in its path.
This still strikes me as weirdly unrealistic. Did people do think? When... Yeah, let's go in and smash the fern, fellows.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, let's knock over the dangerous chemicals. That's good. Oh. Huh?
Oh, did they kill a rabbit, D? What happened there? Hey, Jeff. Look! Oh shit, they've started a fire.
Yeah, they... My rabbit's gone! We better get out of here! Come on, my rabbit! My rabbit! Look out, Jeff! Look out for that fire!
What's going on here? Dead. Oh, they're gonna be in trouble now.
Dead. What?
Gonna be in a lot of trouble.
Before the law, you and you alone are responsible for the shocking, appalling waste you've caused. But we know today there's more to it than that. You parents must share the responsibility, for somewhere along the line you have failed your sons. You have failed to teach them moral values. And by denying them the love, the security, and the sense of belonging, which is important to every living being.
Shame, all the shame.
You have hurt them as surely as though you had denied them food. I know that there are other factors, too. The school, the church, and the community all share in this important problem. But the basic fact remains that you three boys are yourselves responsible for your act.
Yes. Severe punishment must follow.
Doctors, our social workers, and others on our staff can help you overcome the fear and hate.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Social workers.
Oh, God's sake. How to live a happy and life. Yeah, you've wrecked the school, so let's give you a social worker. Fucking morons.
I have no choice but to sentence you.
So ends another act of vandalism.
Okay, they did go to jail, Dave. They went to jail. Waste and
destruction. To an environment where they can learn real savagery.
Proper crime, yeah. That was 1955, and when America's crime rate was at a record kind of all-time low.
Low,
and,
yeah.
they decided, yeah, let's do liberal bullshit. Let's do, and it only increased from there. If you want to learn about that, there's a good bit on it in the classic book, The Vision of the United by Thomas Sowell, where he talks about LBJ's liberal crime reforms, where they made it even gayer and even more, like, they gave criminals more rights and so on. And he just shows you, like, what they claimed it would do, what ended up happening, the results, and then how they shift the goalposts after the fact. And we're still doing it.
Yeah, I mean, still doing it. Also, I mean, I would say that if I had to pick a U.S. administration responsible for more disaster than any other in the 20th century, I mean, LBJ would be right up there. Because,
the worst president. I know people like to rag on Wilson or
No, I
think LBJ is just the worst.
Yeah, I mean, just the Great Society, aka welfare, and the 1965 Immigration Act. Was it 65?
Yeah, and the Civil Rights Act,
which, yeah, all of them, all those three things, just three. It's three shots in the back of the head for America, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but those liberal crime reforms that he did, as well, on top of what you just listed. In fact, I've got a video in my back catalogue somewhere. I think it's behind the paywall, called LBJ Worst President Ever, where I kind of go through it point by point. I think it's probably still available for free in one of the academic agent retrospectives, maybe the one on America and race. But he did. He was effectively, you know, we always talk about, like, Tony Blair and his effect on this country. In a way, LBJ was like their Tony Blair. It happened earlier there. Although I will mention that Peter Hitchens notes that pretty much every change they made in America had a mirror over here. Who was the prime minister at that point? Wilson, was it?
Maybe
Macmillan.
Wilson or Macmillan, Heath. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was those sorts of characters.
Yeah.
But in the mid 60s, they basically passed their own version of the Immigration Act, their own version of the civil rights stuff, and basically wrote things like racism into law and things like that, which is kind of hidden. Like, nobody really talks about that over this side, but Hitchens goes into it all in. He's got a book called The Abolition of Liberty, or A Brief History of Crime. And he kind of goes into a lot of that legislation that was put in the mid 60s. It's kind of weird because a lot of the, this is why I talk about the gay, as we call it. There's this weird harmony between the Western nations. Cause I think France said that had their version of it in the mid 60s as well. Yeah, something that if somebody wants to do a project one day, they can look at harmonization of civil rights bullshit across the West. Anyway, shall we have a look at another stream, D? Another video. I think we've reached the 60s. A date for dinner. Is that right? D? I think I've lost D. Hello? I think I've lost him. Am I? Press one, chat. I don't know what's going on. Okay. All right. I don't know what happened there. D's obviously been detained, so I'll just stop. I'll just start another video. Let's do date for dinner.
Hello,
D. You're back.
Sorry, yeah, back.
I'm 28 seconds into the next video, which is it's called
Date
for Dinner. Yeah.
Yeah.
28 seconds in.
Okay. Hang on. Let me get there. Okay. Are you paused?
I'm paused, and there's this man about to make a coffee or something.
Okay. Oh, he's making a telephone call.
Oh, a telephone call. Ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go. Yes, telephone call, sorry. Look, it's that crew cut again, Dee.
Hello, is Linda there?
The handsome young fellow with a crew cut.
Is this Miss Taylor? Well, I'm Eddie Williams. Say, do you know where I can reach her? I've called 3 times and she hasn't been home. Central 6? 0842? I've got it. Thanks a lot, Miss Taylor. Bye-bye.
Is this the girl? Okay.
Girls, but the Bobby Soxers, as they were called.
Yeah.
So, Kathy, I told Mom, if he isn't going to tell her who he is, I'm certainly not going to wait for whoever he is.
A lot of apples consumed in the film today.
Yes.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, hi, Linda. This is Eddie Williams. Boy, are you hard to get a hold of. Called you 3 times last week.
I didn't know you were calling. You never left your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to know if you'd like to go out to dinner with me Saturday.
Saturday?
Saturday?
This Saturday?
Well, yeah, that is if you're not busy.
Oh, I love these, the terror of these phones.
Oh, no, I'm not busy.
These are good phones.
I'd love to go.
Swell. Pick you up about 7 then?
Swell. Gee whiz.
Gee whiz.
Goodbye.
Gee willikers. Look at the glow of satisfaction. Whoop.
Yes, ooh, sir.
Yeah.
Sorry, get Rowan Atkinson.
Get back to work.
But I've never been out on a dinner date before. I'm just scared to death. Why? You know, check rooms and waitresses and ordering and it's
can I just say that this girl would be about 20 stone today,
do
everything
wrong.
Without doubt.
She's on a quite a dearth of fat people in these.
Not for you.
I mean, she's if I had kind of, you know.
Linda, the restaurant's closed on Mondays.
I just think she'd be a lot fatter if she was around today.
We'll ask her about all the things that are bothering you. Besides,
also, I mean, these for 1960, they would have been upper middle class. They have a television in the kitchen, which
yes,
fairly unusual, you know. What kind of like the chairs? Look, Kleenex tissues. I think that this is secretly sponsored by someone because I saw Kleenex in the other shot as well.
Jerry!
Well, hi, Linda.
Well, for heaven's sake.
Well, hi, Jerry. Hi, Linda.
Well, I'm always home, you know that.
I like that shirt-jumper combo. I've always liked shirt-jumper combos, Dee.
Maybe.
Indeed.
I like them on girls, though.
Oh, I see. I like the sculptured hair as well.
You remember my friend Linda Taylor?
That box of tissues is too conspicuous. This is definitely some sort of subversive product placement.
Yes, I do.
And Kathy tells me you're a little upset.
Well,
see, I missed the beginning. Some of Dr. Prevost said it's a multinational manufacturer of paper products. This film's the sponsor.
Were you self-conscious when Jerry helped you with your coat?
Golly, no. He always
golly,
no.
And because you're comfortable with
look,
him,
there's more Kleenex.
Kleenex it's definitely product placement. Kleenex.
Oh, room is filled with them. Is she going to have to? There's going to be crying. Well, she's going to have to reach for a tissue. The
more often could be something else that goes on. The easier it is. That they need Kleenex.
Oh!
What we're going to do is practice right here with you, Kathy, and
no.
First, we'll set
the young man is certainly going to have a box of those in his room.
You get the placemats, and Jerry, you get the menus. They're in the living room.
Yeah, get the menus, Jerry. We always have a menu, don't we?
Let's practice from the beginning now. This will be the hat check stand. You take over there, Kathy.
And oh, Linda, I see. They're practicing the date.
Enter from the kitchen.
Yeah. I like some of this incidental furniture and stuff, though, by the way.
Oh, yeah,
I like the 1960 style, you know.
Yeah, me too.
The gentleman holds the door for the girl and lets her precede him into the restaurant. They both go to the hat check stand, where it is proper, if the girl desires, for her to check her coat. Or she can keep her coat and drape it over her chair back after she is seated.
See, this is good. People need this today. Training for how to do a date.
Well, we laughed at the How to Buy Food, but I mean, they need that today, you know. They need films to teach them how to do everything.
I mean, our Scottish friend, Columba, could do with this.
Yeah, that's exactly who I was thinking of, Columba, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to be an 18th century romantic poet, but he's got to learn how to, like, you know, have dinner first. Look, the proper, you know, and it's tableware.
More or less work from the outside in toward your plate as the courses are served.
Do you know what a soup spoon?
There is usually a soup spoon,
yeah,
a coffee spoon, and a dessert spoon. Then a butter knife.
Mrs. A would be all over this, by the way, Dee. She loves all this shit.
Now on the other side, you have your salad fork and your regular fork.
Your dinner fork, yeah.
Naturally, you will carry a small purse.
Although, why is there only one glass? There needs to be a water glass, there needs to be a red wine glass, a white wine glass.
You immediately unfold your table napkin. Not all the way, just
have... Oh, they wouldn't have wine because they're teenagers. Okay.
Then look at the menu. You will have ample time to study the menu, and you may ask about any dish that has a name you'd... Menus are nothing to be confused about once you become familiar with them. Notice that there are two price lists. One for
where did they get these menus?
And one for table d'hote, which is the complete dinner.
Ooh, what's...
The left side items, which
you could work out inflation based on these prices, by the way.
Chop steak, right. $1.45.
The entree is the main course.
1960, you could work out inflation.
Includes only the main course, potatoes,
God,
salad, bread and butter, and sometimes a vegetable.
Where's the point of... Where's the point voice?
If you order a la carte, the appetizer, coffee, and dessert cost extra.
Ooh.
The right side of the menu is for the table d'hote. This costs more.
Table d'hote.
You will usually find several appetizers listed to choose from.
Prime
marinated
beef.
Herring. Marinated
others
herring.
Yeah, a lot of seafood. Baked shrimp, I like
with which to eat them. If there is no price,
prime rib of beef, $3.50.
The appetizer is included with the price of the dinner, and you choose only one. If you choose one that has a price beside it,
tomato
the cost
juice.
Of it will be added even to a complete dinner.
Bit odd.
After the appetizer, the waitress will bring soup. Soup du jour, translated literally, means soup of the day. And it's perfectly all right to ask
so hungry,
what is the soup du jour. You might not want to order soup if it's a kind you don't care for.
Really hungry.
Oh.
After choosing your entree or meat course, you will have a choice of salad dressings.
There's
so
your salad,
an
iceberg
ranch,
lettuce
vinegar,
drizzled in bottle dressing with two
avoid using a
flavorless
knife
tomatoes.
It's preferable to use a fork.
Yeah, that's
I feel like
that's
more effort could have gone into that salad.
You also have
yeah,
a
miserable
of
salad. The worst.
And you will be asked how you want your potatoes. Usually baked, whipped, French fried, or cottage fried.
Cottage.
You cut one bite-sized portion of meat and finish eating it before cutting more. If there is gravy left and you would like to eat it, you may do so by putting a small piece of bread down on the gravy and then eating it with your fork, as
no,
if it were any other help.
Shovel it in.
Plate.
Pick the plate up, shovel it in. Oh, look, there's your flat white.
Most people prefer to wait and have coffee with their dessert.
Poor old flat whites have not been invented yet.
Coffee, be sure to put the spoon on the saucer. It's bad manners to leave your spoon in the cup. The same rule applies after you have finished your dessert. If it is the kind served in a sherbet dish, which has its own serving plate, like ice cream, fruit, or gelatin.
Gelatin?
Your escort will give your order to the waitress. And a well-trained waitress seldom, if ever, asks the girl a direct question. If she should, however,
that's interesting, isn't it?
She demands that
it's not interesting.
Yeah, that's true. It's true as well. Yeah.
Our oil and vinegar has a little garlic in it. Will that be all right? Oh, well, I'll have the French dressing then.
Two with French dressing.
That garlic is a bit too wild.
After the waitress takes
too
your order,
wild.
She leaves. In the meantime, you might like to have one of the rolls the waitress or busboy brought when you first sat down.
Yeah, fill up on the bread.
Always break off a small portion of the roll. Butter and eat that before breaking off more.
Here's how we got 30 stone women. That's how we get it.
And if an accident occurs, it's not the end of the world. Anyone can have this happen. If you drop something, you just leave the item on the floor and let one of the restaurant employees.
She's just like a fucking flibby, just throwing forks on the floor.
In the meantime, your escort will wait until your waitress.
That's true, though. Exactly. If you go to a decent restaurant, you don't pick up something, you drop it.
We dropped a fork here. Could we have another one, please?
Of course, sir.
And if it's a really good restaurant, they should notice that immediately and deal with it.
Yes. Do you know what I wish they'd have at all restaurants, not just the top ones, Dave? Is the little guy who comes along with the scraping, like they'll scrape the crumbs off the table.
Oh, the crummer, yeah.
Yeah, I want that. In fact, I'd employ someone to just do it around the house, you know. I like that.
Do not refold the napkin. Simply place it unfolded beside your plate. Although a minimum of makeup
Kleenex is at the table, Kleenex,
your date probably would prefer to confine all face fixing to the powder room.
Yeah, go to the powder room, you savage.
Excuse me, please.
Sure.
I think even girls today would know to do that.
Yeah.
Your escort will take care of the check, leaving a tip for the waitress equal to perhaps 15% of the bill.
You're going to get scowls if you just do 15% these days.
He does not tip the hat check girl until you retrieve your coats.
Yeah.
Then he may leave 15 cents or so for each coat.
15 cents. I love it.
That's all there is to it, Linda. Easy, isn't
See,
it?
See, you're saying that all this is useless now. Banality. I disagree, Dee. I think it's,
I'll get it.
I think that it a lot of people today wouldn't know any of this stuff.
I think practicing no. this way is a good
I mean,
idea.
If you grow up in a, you know, well, if you grow up
well,
when
sure
I did. You know, you would have this enforced at home, but a lot of people don't learn this. So certainly, you know,
you.
If you have aspirations of, you know, being having
okay,
proper manners and conducting things, you know, in a proper way, then you need to learn it from somewhere.
Hello, Eddie. How did you know I was home? Oh. Well, wherever you want to go is all right with
me. But also in terms of what the man's meant to do and what the woman's meant to do.
Oh, golly, yeah. I'd love to go. I'll be ready.
Although I think feminists would say it's outdated, outmoded.
Outmoded. Well, everyone would say, just let it all hang, you know, just be Lizzo, you know, just be.
Let it all hang out, you know.
Yeah,
do your makeup at the table. And
bloated, fat woman, you know, at the table, if you have to belch, you know. Yeah, disgusting.
All right, so how many more do you want to do, Dee?
I don't know. I would do a couple more. I really want to do the British ones, and then I want to do one of the mental sort of 70s ones or the 80s one, if you want.
Do you want to do national parks or the industrial town?
Up to you.
I'm kind of drawn to the industrial town. So we've been all in America so far.
Okay.
Or do you want to have a look at this Muslims in Cardiff thing?
Well, we could just put it on, and then you could. Yeah. You said you had sort of an.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of stuff to say about this because Cardiff has had a let's just say a significant Asian population for quite a long time, and I'd be fascinated just to see what they looked like in 1961, and what
okay.
Cardiff looked like. I know Cardiff pretty well because obviously it was the biggest. You know, we could either go to Swansea or Cardiff, right? When I was a kid. And Cardiff was usually quite a treat for me, you know. But let's see what it looked like in 1961.
Yeah, we'll watch some of this. I don't think we can watch all of it. I mean,
not
mind
all 18 minutes, but...
No,
it,
not
you know.
All 18 minutes. Also, it's in Arabic. I mean, people will be amazed about this. This is a film from 1961, and it's called Moslems... spelled MOSLEMS as it used to be, Muslims in Britain, Cardiff, 1961. So if anyone thinks this is just like a new situation, it isn't. All right.
So, let us get up. Muslims in Cardiff from 1961.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Okay.
Started out subtle there, didn't they?
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar ala hadha ad-din al-hanif alladhi nazala ala Muhammadin famala ad-dunya khayran wa nuran.
This is going to be the big reveal, D, there in Cardiff. We're going to pan down and we're in Cardiff. This is weird.
Yeah, it's a bit arty, isn't it?
I don't remember seeing any Arabic footage from the 60s, so this is kind of a very unusual for me.
Yeah.
سلام الله عليكم من كارديف. كارديف عاصمة ويلز. كارديف الميناء الذي يسكنه إخوان لنا في الإسلام. إخوان يعيشون في تلك المدينة لا عيشة المهاجر بل عيشة المواطن. وها أنا ذا على أبوابها. ما على سيارتي الآن إلا أن تحملني إلى المصنع الذي يعمل فيه الشيخ.
Can AA translate?
There's the
yeah.
I can't speak Arabic. I mean. في هذه الشوارع
الواسعة. بعد أن قطعت حوالي 200 كيلو. Look at what they took from you.
I mean, the Cardiff Castle looks the same as it does now, obviously. This is unusual, though, Dee, because I'm not aware of any Arabic population of Cardiff. They're much more likely to be Pakistanis and things like that, rather than Arabic.
على كل حال كان والدي يشتغل في البحار بحار
كان بحار
اي نعم
فعندما no, these are not Iranians. And no, they're not speaking Welsh.
No, they're not. They're speaking Arabic. And I, do you know which country this comes from?
I believe it's British. This production. I don't know who produced it.
British in Arabic. Though.
Let me see if I can find out who produced it.
How mysterious.
Yeah, I thought it was quite strange. It's
from like the division that employed John Baggett Glubb to like lead the Arab Legion. You know, it's gonna.
Maybe he'll pop up.
He's the presenter, this dude. The guy with a moustache.
Yeah.
Who's this for? I mean, clearly, you're saying it was a British production, but how many people could speak Arabic in, like, 1960? Even today, how many British people can speak Arabic?
So it was produced by United Motion Pictures for the Central Office of Information, which is the British, which was the British film government film division.
But who was the intended audience for it?
I suppose Muslim. I don't know.
This is very odd, Dee. I mean, this must have... I mean, where was this video? I'd love to know... They obviously produced it for an audience. Were they playing this in parts of the empire as it existed at the time to say, come to Cardiff? It's great here, Arabs, or what?
I wonder. Yeah, that may have been what it was for.
Very interesting, eh?
Yeah. It's very strange.
They don't speak Arabic in Pakistan, do they? Because there's a street. The reason I know this is that there's this particular street down Cardiff where there's this kind of ethnic food store called Claire's, and it was the only place my dad could get this certain herb. So sometimes we used to go down there, and I always remember that it was all like. Like every street, basically, all the people who live there in that area for many, many years has been, let's just say, an ethnic minority.
There's lots of different languages spoken there. Punjabi, Pashto, Sindhi, Urdu, yeah.
But not Arabic.
But they're not Arabic, no. Yeah. If the official language is Urdu, so Pakistan. But these are Arabic.
This guy's name is Muhammad Ali, D.
Is it?
He said, I'm pretty sure he said, what's your name? He's like, my name's Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, it's a very common name, yeah. For Saracens.
Trying to figure out where these guys... It's obscure, though, as to where they're from.
Yeah, I mean, they may be saying where they're from. But...
The guy, if I had to guess, I think the guy looks Egyptian, but I could be wrong.
Mm. The presenter looks certain. I think he looks Egyptian.
The presenter's got an Egyptian. I learned a lot about the different ethnicities of Arabs from John Paget Glubb.
From Glubb, yeah.
Yeah, because he's got like a whole book just saying, going through all the like really minute specific. He was saying like the Saudi Arabians are like basically have nothing in common with the Egyptians whatsoever.
No.
Which is like a different race. Pretty much, according to him. Yeah. So.
Well, this is what's so difficult about the kind of the Muslim world is that there's hundreds of different designations. You know, they're not a united people. You know,
I mean, this is Glubb's argument that they, you know, apart from the language and Islam, they're basically just different people from all over the place.
Like just hundreds of tribes.
Yeah.
Even Persia's like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even within Iran, only about 50% of the country are Persians, versus all these other random ethnicities. Yeah. But Glubb kind of makes the case that the Saudi Arabians are almost like the kind of, you know, like in kind of racialist literature. That there's a kind of gradation between different types of whites, with Aryans at the top and like Slavs down the bottom or whatever. Yeah. There's like an Arab version of that, according to Glubb, where the Saudi Arabians are kind of near the pure Arabs, and like the Egyptians and Lebanese and all this sort of stuff, that they are degraded or whatever. They're not proper Arabs, according to Glubb. So
this is a mosque in Cardiff in 1961.
In 1961.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. The Nur-ul Islam Mosque in Cardiff. I must have somebody who watches who can speak Arabic, who can get the lowdown on what the hell this video is about.
Yeah.
Like, who's it for? Why has it been made?
Amazing glasses.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what the locals thought of this in 1960.
I was wondering about that. What are the lads at Cardiff boat building? What do they think of this? What are the coal? What are the coal haulers?
All right, shall we go to a different one? I think we get the idea here. It's just bizarre. And look, there he is talking to local dignitaries and. Wonder what he's saying. He's just like, you know that scene in Scarface, right? Where Al Pacino's like, Tony Montana says, America's just one big pussy waiting to get fucked. Do you think he's just like telling the Arabic community, he's just like, listen, they haven't fucking got a clue. Just come in, you'll make bank. You know, their leaders are stupid. They don't keep out foreigners. Just fucking come here. Do you think that's what he's saying? I mean, I get the impression that's what's going on here.
I wonder.
Something deeply sinister about this video. Like, the very fact that it exists at all, it seems to be like a tourist information thing geared towards an Arabic audience to come to Cardiff.
So I'm just skimming through, and he's talking to a white woman, but I don't know who that is. She's wearing a chain.
Yeah, she's obviously the mayor of Cardiff.
Was there a lady mayor of Cardiff in 1961? Okay.
Look, I mean, they're literally just like full on like towels and.
Yeah. Oh
no!
Is that a pub?
Look at this shot here. He's saying like. You know, you too could bring your entire family.
your entire family. Yeah, and look, it's a classroom full of little Muslims. Although it's co-educational, which is quite odd. There's the Angel Hotel. But yeah, this is odd.
You're saying this was sponsored by the British government?
It was produced for the Office of Information, Central Office of Information, which is the British Film Division at that time, British Government Film Division at that time.
You know what's really weird is that we've seen basically no Welsh people in the entirety of this video, apart from that woman that he met.
Well, there's a brief thing where he goes, it looks like he goes into a pub and there's like a very Welsh looking woman. But yeah, that's it. There's no Welsh people.
Look, he doesn't meet any locals or be like, oh, you know, there's like an overhead. I remember there was a Wimpy here somewhere. This is the bus stop in Cardiff. That building is still there. Or it was last time I went to Cardiff. And there's a Wimpy in this building. Yeah, there's a Wimpy there somewhere. You can get one of those like bendy sausage burgers there.
On a plate. Yeah. Someone must speak Arabic amongst your audience who can look at this.
He doesn't speak to any locals.
If you go to archive.org, I believe you can find this. If you just look up Cardiff Moslems, MOSLEMS, you will find it. So
in 1961, there was a classroom in Cardiff that looked like this.
Yeah. It was happening long before people thought it was happening. I'm telling you.
I mean, I wonder what they were teaching them.
I wonder.
There he is again. Oh, look, there he is again. All, look, you know.
They're all boys, by the way. I thought there were girls in there, but oh no, that is a girl.
Okay. So let's carry on. That was unusual, very unusual.
Yeah, I thought it was odd.
So let us have a look now at an industrial town in Britain from 1962.
Okay.
Pull that one up.
Yep.
And 3, 2, 1, and go. An eye on the names, Steve. An eye on the names. Yeah. We're in Britain, though, so much less likely here, I would say.
Yeah.
Once you're across this massive viaduct, you're in Huddersfield, in the north of England. It's neither old and charming, nor bright and new, for this is an industrial town, a product of the industrial revolution of the 19th century. It's a place where time is marked by the sound of the factory hooter. And in the mornings, the busiest roads are those which lead to the textile mills and to the engineering works.
Hooter.
Some of the firms have gone on from generation to generation employing the same families, a relationship which has helped to mold the district into a closely knit community.
By the way, to the audience, all of this is gone. All of it.
I was about to say what he just said was based on Trumped and Pilled, very great chain of being. This,
yes, but it's all been broken.
Is Huddersfield just a wreck now? Is it?
Yeah,
women
a complete
have
wreck.
Always worked in the textile mills, and millions of yards of fine woolen fabrics have gone streaming out of their hands to almost every part of the world.
I mean, these were days when all your fabric was personally stroked by a woman.
Passes to the men at the steam press.
Yeah, men pass to the men. Time Stealer's grandmother there.
Soon, this material will be on its way to places.
The whole country was built on textiles, originally, you know.
Montreal. Yeah. Certainly was. And it's all gone because of the base Tories who decided to sell up, to sell the country off. It made them more money to sell it all off.
Roar in the valleys, but the town has the good fortune to be on the edge of some fine country.
Nice.
A sharp walk will bring you to the hills of hard rock, where the stone walls firmly bind the landscape, unbroken and continuous to the last wilderness.
Now and completely where the birds covered still with go wind, crying in the empty windfall. Air,
as they did before the Romans came.
Just think, Barrett Holmes can cover all of this for all the Dinos and all of the new Britons.
Yeah.
Only coarse grass, which sheep can feed on, can grow on these hills. This country is rich in springs and streams, and you're scarcely ever out of sound of falling water. The water is free from lime.
Who ever thought that you could watch a film about Huddersfield in 1961 and feel nostalgic?
Now the BBC voiceover will be telling you the countryside is racist. Like, literally, I'm not even joking.
No, they do.
The sound of the weaver at his loom. Plenty of water, plenty of power. And so factories sprang up, and trade flourished. With the coming of steam power, factories moved to the towns. As the textile industry prospered, it became more mechanized and encouraged the growth of engineering. The products of the local engineering industries are now well known throughout the world. Electric motors, tractors,
and was gears, Jerusalem built it here amongst these dogs?
See, there's something about this kind of heavy industry I quite like, the heavy industry.
Yeah, well, you know.
Having many kinds of industries has meant
any industry.
Oh yes, the people of Huddersfield are shrewd, hard-working, and fiercely independent. But they have a natural gaiety and a zest for pleasure. Today, their way of life is gradually changing. The rows of little back-to-back houses and narrow streets are giving way to modern blocks of
flats. No!
God's sake!
Industry is still a grimy business. But the strict control of heavy smoke from factory chimneys is helping towards cleaner and brighter.
Have you ever seen the documentary Who Cares, Dee? Made by
sparkle and laughter.
It's really worth a watch. It's about exactly the program to pull down all the old Victorian houses and replace them with those monstrosities.
No, I haven't seen it. Oh,
it's,
God.
It's only 70 minutes long, but it's a classic. Everybody should watch it. We wouldn't be able to watch it on here because of copyright, obviously. But,
yeah, I will.
He's the documentary maker who made that Nirvana documentary years later.
Shopping is easy. The town abounds with shops and stores, not all of which are confined to the main streets.
I saw a Panama hat ancestor.
I just love watching this stuff, Dee. I love it. I just can't get enough of watching
it. Take a side turning almost anywhere off the main road, and it's almost bound to bring you to the market. The lure of the market is strong, even in the rain. Between tablecloths and towels at one extreme, and
carpet merchants,
are rows and rows of drapery, boots and shoes.
You see, this is a real living culture.
Yeah.
Bargaining here.
Even though it was industrial, Dee, even though it was industrial and capitalist and so on, it was still an actual culture.
Yeah.
The afternoon wind skirls Wedgwood, the canvas roofs of the stalls and loosens itself among the factory chimneys. It dies down a little here, where there's a group of secondary modern schools.
Yeah.
These schools were opened in 1956 by Princess Margaret, and there are places for about 2,500 children.
Princess
after
Margaret
the age of
15. In 1956.
Here, as elsewhere, they can prepare to meet the needs of a technical age unknown to their grandparents. In addition to general academic subjects, the children are taught many of the crafts essential to this modern age, including pottery.
Yeah, that'll come in handy.
No, I think it's wonderful. Look, white British boys learning how to throw pots.
I'm just saying the idea that pottery would come in handy in the future is...
In the future, yeah.
Seems a bit ridiculous from our vantage point.
...provided at the Huddersfield College of Technology. This is one of the largest institutions for further education outside London.
Do you know, I love that foreman's jacket. You don't really see those. You know, they had them a lot in the 60s.
It was one of the first towns to provide
home. Yeah, there's those sort of tan colored.
Splendid scheme called the Workshop for the Elderly. And here you see some of the old people doing small but useful tasks for local industries.
Amazing.
Mm.
No, now they're sealed away in a care home, neglected until they die.
And time for home. Home is not very far away, for Huddersfield is not a big, sprawling town like London, for example. In less than half an hour, a worker can walk again on home ground and leave behind the bustle of industry for the quiet of his private world of suburban houses and gardens and a meal with the family.
Interested to see what Huddersfield looks like now, Dee.
With a fast set of tennis, perhaps. Or a quiet game of bowls.
Bowls.
Or a round of golf. For many, there's nothing better than watching a game played by the Huddersfield Town Football Club on their
football.
Home ground. A good match, clean, fast, and exciting.
Well, of course, this was the era where all the footballers would be from Huddersfield, you know.
Yes. No, even the Premiership football sides were originally teams for factories and things like that.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Here's where we're going to get... isn't this the music that was... the Liverpool Philharmonic is going
to
play...
Oh, yes. We need to talk over this bit a lot.
Yeah.
Sort of turn it down or whatever.
Or you can just mute it, you know.
The choir, which is known and admired throughout the
country,
has been in existence for over 100 years.
I have to turn it down, because it could get copyrighted.
And the glory of the Lord, will be redeemed. Yeah, they're doing Glory of the Lord from Handel's Messiah, but... shall be redeemed. God's sake.
Conceived in burning conviction, and it expresses something that is fundamental.
see these little boys that we're seeing here would have been teenagers in the 70s. It's kind of strange to think about how they would have been.
Yeah. And you know, probably pensioners now.
Oh, yeah, just entering. They'd be about 60 now, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But if this was 1961, they'd have been born in, 58 or something? Yeah. Maybe 65, yeah. Something like that.
Yep. Crown copyright. Oh, dear. Well, that's depressing.
I enjoyed watching it, but yeah, it was sad.
Yeah, as these things are always sad. Pull up a picture of Huddersfield today. Let's just have a quick
I'm interested to have a look at Huddersfield. I'll just type it in, see what comes up. I see a lot of results about the football. Here are some pictures of Huddersfield town centre and as it exists. I mean, I think it's probably had a bit of European money in it at some point, if I had to guess, but here it is. That's the train station.
Yep.
Millions of pounds have been poured into Huddersfield as an investment surge. You know.
Yeah.
So.
I would suspect that almost all of those industries have gone.
Yeah, and now it's now like, you know, go to a Cafe Nero and it's the same as every other bloody town.
And an empty, deracinated corporate high street with, you know.
It's still got the market there. Still there, I guess. But yes, I mean, it's...
COVID probably killed it.
There's an overhead shot. Some overhead shots of it, so... Yeah.
It could be worth.
You know, it's not looking as a. You see, a lot of these former industrial towns have gone under this kind of, I guess I'd call it like globo homo renovation.
Yeah.
Where you basically take the kind of decrepit husk of it and you just stuff it full of like cafes. It's basically it, you know.
Yeah, or some sort of like half-baked arts program. I mean, all that, like, again, that bit about, you know, the tight-knit community and all of these sort of local tradition. I mean, all of that is gone, I'm sure, you know, or mostly gone. Yeah, look, there's a subway. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can see, I mean, it's just like everywhere. I mean, just the whole country is like that now.
Yeah, it's just anywhere. Wherever you go, it's just
anywhere in the country is the same.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, well, it's you know.
Homogenization.
It worked in America, and it certainly worked in Britain.
So, you know, I'd still like to. I've never really been to that part of the country properly. Evidence of a Huddersfield grooming ring has not been followed up, apparently. So,
what a surprise!
Brilliant, you know. there's the University of Huddersfield, where you can become one of these characters.
Yeah, like, wonderful. Well, wonder when the Huddersfield Pride Parade is.
There's I mean, this could be anywhere. The point I'm making is it's just like, well, the whole country is just that over and over again.
Yeah, well, that's the dream, you know. Every 15-minute city will be like every other 15-minute city. You won't need to go anywhere. Because anywhere you go will be just like where you came from.
Where's our videos from people living in, I don't know, Dubai or something? Come and live in Dubai. Get away from all of this. You know, we need our version of it. But then again, if you actually do go to Dubai. Those places are just the soulless, you know.
They're worse. Oh, I hate that. Oh, I hate any. All
one
of
the worst
new...
places I've ever been, to be honest. Dubai.
Yeah, I mean, Dubai is awful. All of those cities.
There's just, you know, no just culture anywhere.
Disgusting. No. You know, again, that just obscene sort of like low class luxury that, you know, that everyone yearns for. And also, like, half of Dubai is just like Instagram hookers going there to be shat on by Saudi princes.
Oh, most of the country is just like low level servants and things like that. Yeah, I've only been there. I think I went there with work once, and we did like this kind of cruise thing where we stopped off at different places, and Dubai was one of the stops that we stopped in at, and. I always remember my dad refused to set foot on it. He was like, I will not touch Dubai soil for some reason.
Based. Based.
He just wouldn't
love
off,
it.
Wouldn't get off the ship. So anyway, one more and then we get out of here, do you think? I don't think we're going to make it to the 70s, D.
What have we got left? Tell me what we've got left.
Well, we've got by the same people looking at Britain national parks.
Oh, national parks, right.
Yeah, so which is, I think those two films were made together by the looks of things.
Yes.
And then we basically just got a leap into the 70s. So I'm wondering if we could keep all the 70s ones for a 70s show, maybe. Drugs Are Like That, and If Mirrors Could Speak, and Alone at Home.
Alone at Home is actually your, it's 1983, so it's... You know,
even I was actually alive.
You were actually alive, and you will recognize. I mean, even though it's American, I think you will certainly recognize that world. But
my feel is because we, let's face it, we're going to come back to in a couple of weeks. I'll be like, what should we do? And
yeah,
we'll
probably. All right, let's do national park.
And then we'll thematically we'll just be like 50s and 60s, and then. We'll do 70s and 80s next time. So.
Yeah, and I mean, all of the 70s and 80s things are absolutely cursed. So beyond your imagination. I mean, you remember, well, we watched a few. Do you remember that film with Turnip with the briefcase and the song about the itty bitty titty committee and
yes,
or do you remember the one where the children on with wearing masks and bikes and they all like die?
Yes, bass. Yeah, that... No, I enjoy the 70s ones. They're a very different vibe though, aren't they?
They are, and who could forget Apaches? You know,
Apaches is awesome.
Great,
absolutely okay. Awesome. All right, so we've got right 3, 2, 1, and go.
Kino crack film. Racist.
Britain is a busy, crowded island, and as more and more houses and factories are built, it becomes increasingly important to keep unspoiled the beauty and peace of the countryside, so that people can escape from the noise and smoke of the cities.
Quite right too.
Yeah.
Parliament foresaw this. That's been fun. And decided that large areas of still unspoiled countryside should be marked out as national parks to protect the landscape beauty for public enjoyment. National parks now cover nearly 1/11th of the area of England and Wales, and each of them has a character and beauty all its own. Mm. Everyone is welcome to visit these great national parks, and young people in particular like to spend their holidays roving through this open countryside on foot or on their bicycles, staying each night at one of the youth hostels which have been set up for them.
Snowden! Yes. Are they going to ride their bicycles up Snowden? Oh, he's a chunky fellow.
Yeah, I was just thinking, he's quite a chunky lad, that one.
Snowdonia, in North Wales, is one of the grandest of all the parks. Here, clear mountain lakes reflect the outlines of the mountain ranges which surround them, until a swimmer splashes that reflection into 1,000 ripples.
I like that someone took the time to like write that poetically.
Mm-hmm. Where summer courses are organized in several popular open-air activities. Beyond the swimming class, boating enthusiasts gather to revel in the sun and the scenery, while they learn to practice the delicate skill of managing a canoe.
Do you think health and safety was put stop to all this now, Dee? You're like, you're not allowed on the river, not allowed to jump in.
Probably. But they're all wearing life vests, we've all noted.
Yes.
Oh, he's going in. Yeah. I don't care if it's summer, that water is quite cold. I also detect a slight hint of the Subversive Jazz soundtrack.
Yes, and a bit of there's a bit of that faint American tone of triumphalism in it all. Do you know what I mean? Especially compared to the industrial one we just watched.
Yeah, exactly. It's very different. Very different feeling.
I feel like there should be an American voiceover trying to sell me something, you know?
Yeah, Kleenex.
Kleenex, yeah.
Below the climbers, city dwellers normally accustomed to buses and cars, now feel the wind blowing past their ears and the springy thud of their horses' hooves as they trek along a rough...
By the way, Twitter has just ruined my brain, Dee, because now all I can think of is she orgasming.
Oh.
Because, I mean, this has been like a talking point brought up again and again. We've been claiming that horse riding gives them orgasms.
looks like. Is that Prince Philip? No.
I do. We live in the ashes. You bring the ashes to wherever you go. That's the whole problem.
Yeah, you sully the past. You rub the ashes into the.
You can't
past.
Get it. It's like you know, like in Faustus, Mephistopheles tells him, "I'm wherever I go, I'm in hell."
Indeed.
It's not like you can just escape. You know
why this is hell, nor am I out of it. Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you, that one who saw the face of God and tasted the everlasting bliss.
Like all young boys,
yeah.
These two enjoy feeling tough and.
Oh yeah, I should have. They will sleep Tuesday, Effie well Tuesday. I should have. I should have done that.
Good,
no thanks. Snorts, Black Dog. What do they do? Oh, they got their little cans.
When they take down their tent and move on, they will, like these campers, think of other people and take care to leave
sugar
their
puffs.
Site tidy and free from litter, so that no mark of their
your giant pots of sugar puffs.
Don't do it. Revolt against the modern world.
No, look at these lads. Oh, yeah. Like the Volkswagen.
Yeah, people notice the Quaker Oaks, man. They make sugar puffs.
Its name from the greatest mountain in England and Wales, set amid scenery of
I actually do like. I like this soundtrack.
Providing a challenge to all aspiring climbers and mountain walkers. Those who are too young or too inactive to climb or walk can board the little mountain railway, which chugs its way to the very summit of Snowdon.
Yeah, which is still railway station. It's still there in a different form.
Yeah. Time Stealer and Alex Masters are just going mental somewhere, you know.
I know. That's Enid, the little tram. They would know exactly what it is. I don't know my engine.
The railway travels up and down all summer long. The views from the windows are lovely, and it's a pleasant way to get to the top, leaving the more energetic travellers to reach the summit the hard way. No more cheating for them. At home, Bill and Tommy may ride in Father's car, but here they prefer to stride forward with their packs on their backs through the open landscape.
What do you think? Bill and Tommy are quite close, aren't they, Dee?
Stop it! Stop it with your acting!
It's so corrupting.
Lean on a gate to watch the life of the countryside. For although this land is, as far as possible, safeguarded from industrial development for the enjoyment of all, it still remains the workshop of some. Those who lived here before the area became a national park still own their land, and the farmers grow their crops and tend their sheep and cattle here, as they have always done.
Beautiful.
Now, out on the lonely hillsides, Bill and Tommy find a great relic of the past. And looking down on the little town of Harlech, they see an even greater one. The castle, built hundreds of years ago when King Edward I of England was trying to subdue the princes of Wales. Many battles were fought here, and today, visitors like Bill and Tommy look at the castle and remember its exciting history.
The men of Harlech.
Far below lies another authorized camping site, which the boys investigate. Sites like these stop them from camping in unsuitable places. From the mountains of the Snowdonia National Park, we move south to...
Finding
Edinburgh,
this very relaxing, Dee. Sorry.
Yeah,
for
it
is. This time on the borders of Somerset and Devon.
That's a Baratheon territory,
but great stretches of high, wild, open moorland, clothed with grasses and patched with heather. On the tops of the open moor, there's hardly a tree to be seen, and in winter, fierce gales lash across the unsheltered land.
They are the moors!
This great moor looks today as it must have looked thousands of years ago. Even the wild life is little changed. The wolf and the wild boar have disappeared, but the wild red deer remain. At the edge of the moor, the countryside becomes gentler, and the land is seamed with sheltered valleys or coombes. Many are wooded, and remote farmhouses nestle amongst the trees, which protect them from the fierce winds of winter.
Not familiar
Visitors
with that,
often really. Spend their holidays on farms like this, walking, picnicking, and visiting the neighbouring villages.
Thatch!
Exmoor villages have a fascination.
There's still quite a lot of thatch.
Running in the valleys or
especially in the Cotswolds.
The wooded slopes.
Yeah.
By Selwyn, Winsford, Paracombe, Weddon Cross.
It's very expensive,
Artists
but.
To try their skill at capturing the atmosphere.
I think legally they have to maintain it, don't they? You're not allowed
yeah,
to get,
they have
it's
to
not
maintain
a thatch roof.
I mean,
you're not allowed to get rid of it.
You only have to. You only have to renew it. I mean, you know, it lasts quite a long time, but it's very, very expensive to have it redone. But yeah, and there's still firms that do it correctly.
That girl looks a bit like Sarah from the earlier video.
I think it's... Yeah.
Probably not that same girl. It'd be amazing if she escaped the... That school, like I'm moving to England, where people are less like annoying.
They live in the Exmoor.
For the fine row of trees which lines this road serves a special purpose. In a national park, ugly necessities like this rubbish dump must be carefully hidden from sight. And special
hide the rubbish dump.
Carefully watch over all new building in the parks to make sure that it blends with the surrounding countryside and the picturesque old buildings amongst which it is set.
There's Myra Hindley going for a stroll in the moors.
Through the valleys of Exmoor run rivers, the Lynn and the Ex, Orwater and Danes Brook, the Barle and the Bray. Streams that bubble and dance their way to the sea between shaded banks, over little waterfalls, and past strange relics of long ago, such as tar steps. A bridge.
He's using quite unusual words, Dee, like coombe and danks.
A convenient means for the visitor to cross in search of fresh beauty.
Expansive vocabulary in the script.
I really appreciate
waiting
script,
for the fish
you know.
To bite as the water wends its way.
Never get anything like that. I like that. I like the gent fishing with his pipe.
Here, the seaside, little towns like Lymouth.
I will say, I do think the country, in general, on balance, has done a decent job of maintaining the countryside. But like everything else, it's under attack.
It's under attack now. It's under a special attack.
People remember to buy postcards to send back to friends still working in the noisy cities, which now seem far away.
I mean, this is something that really is a big thing for me, is the idea that back then, if you wanted a picture and to remember your day, you bought one and then you took it home. Like now, no one would be living in the moment in any of these places. Everything would
taking
be
taking selfies. And...
Selfies, they'd be taking things and putting them in Instagram or Twitter. Like, they wouldn't just be experiencing this, they would be documenting it, you know. So even if they were out in this, in nature, they would be removing and mediating their experience.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Very unhealthy.
To relax in the freedom of the open
country. I've told you before, Dee, it's a mental prison, because I've tried going without my phone. I still can't do it.
You can't do it, yeah.
No. Much to offer. Destroyed by, I'm a pure product of the ashes.
To the satisfaction of long cross-country walks under open and sunny skies.
Oh.
And even the tiniest hiker can feel the call of the open road. All who come to enjoy the countryside
Lovely.
Are guests in the countryman's home and workplace. They are on trust and have a special responsibility to do no damage, to respect private things, and to take care of the land and livestock as though it were theirs. Walkers, picnickers, and motorists follow the country code of good behavior prepared by the National Park.
There's Sarah enjoying her happy new life in England.
Without Ron.
Walk and ride on
she's getting all the stimulation she needs from her Shetland pony.
Fills crowded cities. Orgasm. I'm just tired.
Will ensure that there remains a haven of fresh air and peaceful beauty for all who enjoy healthy open-air recreation in superb surroundings or find refreshment in a visit to the unspoiled countryside.
Beautiful.
Ending on a white pill.
I didn't like the music, but as some other people did like the music, I didn't like it.
I like the music, but I don't think it fit this film.
Too American, but yeah, in general, I find it really relaxing, actually.
Yeah, and I think the narration was well written and properly done.
We'll come back to this at some point. I don't know exactly when, but when it's not obvious what we're going to do, we sometimes... I did have something I wanted to... You said you did a stream with Red Hawk recently, right?
Yeah.
I have to share this with you because it made me laugh. It's very rare that something on Twitter makes me laugh, like, for a couple of minutes. But this here is incredible.
What is it?
I said live footage of Red Hawk working his magic with his next plate. Can you hear that? Have I shared my audio? Can you hear this?
Yeah.
What session is that? look at the enthusiasm here.
God's sake.
Look. She is... You know, in wrestling, there's a term called no-selling. This dude is being no-sold right here.
No-sold.
She just is dark. Like, this is Daria faced, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I admire his...
Play to him, like, he's really going for it. Really going for it. Takes some guts to do that.
It does. I mean, so it certainly gives you...
And, like, he's trying to...
I like also that you're revealing an Irish merchant on the side.
Oh yeah, sorry.
I would have to get rid of that.
Oh dear, I don't even know what that is.
That's tougher than Mernin to you.
Where's that from? What was somebody put it in the chat? Did they?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, okay. I that is a rare display of male confidence, and I think all Zoomers should learn to dance in front of women like that.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to him. I mean, you know, he gave it a go. That's all you can do. There has been a few super chats before we get out of here. Years the Eunuch says, I hope you'll all visit tonight's installment of Discordant Dragons on my channel. It's a stream, like Unpopular Opinions. Tonight, my featured guests are Aiden Paladin, and what? get this, D, Chris Gard.
No.
Live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. GMT. I have told Chris Gard that he's becoming like the stream equivalent of a cheap hooker. Kind of like being passed around like a kind of soggy biscuit at this point.
Oh. I mean, dear God, he is very agreeable, you know.
Anyway, do watch Years the Eunuch, a good friend of ours. She also says, chat was surprised by the shopping video, but think of the time. Millions of tax dollars to be made selling educational videos to school since public education was the big new thing and part of World War II. That's a good point. She also says, propaganda. Remember, society is top down. They wanted us to grow up in a frame of consumerism, so they had to train people how to think, how to shop, how to eat, etc. Yes, it's a very good point, Yiz. And the Edward Bernays books are literally about this, you know, about like manufacturing consent and changing how people like dream. And, you know, they were very... Yeah. Those early ones we watched were very Bernaysian, especially the General Motors one. And I'd be interested to know if he was involved in the production of that, because all I could think of was Edward Bernays. Jeremy Beadle 8 Bagpuss says, what are these thoughts on... Now, can I just say, last time Jeremy Beadle 8 Bagpuss sent Super Chat in, he sent it from Australia, and now he's sending in Australian and Canadian dollars. So Jeremy Beadle 8 Bagpuss gets around based on the denomination he pays in. He says, what are Mr. D's thoughts on Georgian and Victorian pestle and mortars constructed from solid brass?
Well, I own I own quite a number of those. I quite like them. But I have pestle and mortars dating back to, I think my oldest one is from the 15th century. It's bronze. So yeah. I mean, the, you know, obviously the later ones would be more refined and more geared towards a certain utility. You know, and they were often used commercially, you know. But and you can obviously distinguish between the domestic ones and the commercial ones. I have some wooden, very early wooden domestic ones, very different. But yeah, they're great.
Yes, the Unix says, my response to the bizarre Atomic Age feature dream car advert, this could have been us, but you wanted mass migration and Keynesianism. So there we go.
Yeah. I can give you a bit of information about that film. I just looked it up.
Go on.
It was a 1956 industrial short produced to accompany the General Motors Motorama show that year. It features a woman danced by Tad Tadlock and voiced by Marjorie Gordon, who dreams about a masked man danced by Mark Brough and sung by Joseph Lautner, taking her to the Motorama at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel and Frigidaire's Kitchen of the Future. The film was produced and directed by Victor Solow, that's S-O-L-O-W, for MPO Productions, and features the voice of Thurl Ravenscroft. I thought so. Thurl Ravenscroft was an actor who... It's most well known to me because he voiced so many of those old Disney films, and he was also the voice in a lot of the Disneyland attractions, like the Haunted Mansion and the Pirates of the Caribbean and all of that. If you've ever been to the old Disneyland, he is the voice of all those things, and you will recognize his voice. I'm surprised I didn't actually from that short. The original music was by Sol Kaplan. It was shot in 16mm and so color, so it wasn't Technicolor. There you go. So no Bernays, sadly.
He also Thurl Ravenscroft. Just looking him up, he voiced Tony the Tiger for 5 decades.
No, he was Tony the Tiger.
It's great, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, that was Thurl Ravenscroft. He also was the voice behind Kellogg's Corn Flakes. He was the voice of the classic, he was a vocalist on The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Cruel one, Mr. Grinch. Yes, that's it. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. Yeah, that's him.
He voiced Monstro the Whale in Pinocchio, Disney's Pinocchio.
Wow.
He was in the Disney Alice in Wonderland. Who did he play in that then? I'm having a look now.
You know.
I'm always fascinated by people who have a big impact in your life when you don't even realize it.
Well, remember when we did the deep dive on Ed Wynn, who was...
Yeah, he plays the uncle. He plays the voice of the Mad Hatter, and he plays the uncle in Mary Poppins, right?
Yeah.
So who did Thurl Ravenscroft play in this one then?
Just quickly, the Ed Wynn is very interesting because his voice has been imitated. I mean, even today, you still hear people doing an Ed Wynn voice for things. Like, I remember when you did those McDonald's advert things, and yes, you get to the sort of 70s McDonald land. I think it's the Mayor McCheese. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we've got to get a McDonald's hamburger, you know, which is the Ed Wynn voice. Like, people now just do that voice, probably not even knowing that they're imitating him.
I've just realized that he wasn't a character in Alice in Wonderland, but you know at the start of Alice in Wonderland, that there's that amazing kind of vocal arrangement by a kind of a cappella singing group, right? That group was called the Mellow Men. And I have always loved the Alice in Wonderland soundtrack for that kind of, those kind of vocal harmonies, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's that low booming voice that comes in that was him. So he was part of that group as well.
Wow.
Part of the Mellow Men. They were a barbershop quartet. So it was fascinating. Really fascinating little find there. And you were right. He was in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride and the Haunted Mansion as well.
Yeah, I don't know if they still they may still use his voice. I don't know. He was in a lot of things. Yeah, I mean, 101 Dalmatian, Sleeping Beauty, Lady and the Tramp, Peter Pan. I mean, Alice in Wonderland, in many of the Dumbo, Pinocchio. Yeah, as you said. So.
Coney says, are you still going to make those hate videos on James? No, I was just memeing about on Twitter. I wasn't really going to make videos on him. Incorrigible Pomegranate says, hello, Mr. D. Tis I, the incorrigible pomegranate of the Dragon Chinaware Bowl. How many squiddly diddly avatars did you say you have? Hundreds? I only collected 64 so far. I must have more.
Who is this?
It's the incorrigible pomegranate of the Dragon Chinaware Bowl.
This is someone who listened to that Twitter space that I did the other night with Semigog, where at some point I revealed I had a giant fruit bowl, which is blue and white, a Chinese blue and white porcelain thing that had a dragon in it, who was the master of the fruit bowl. And I had a pomegranate, which I left in that bowl for years, which turned into just like a dried ball with seeds in that you could use as a musical instrument. So someone is very interested in me.
The incorrigible pomegranate, a kind of, a long lost contemporary of the curious orange. Remember that? Anyway, Coney says, I think it's a song by The Fall. The Curious Orange.
Oh, is it?
It was also a character from a Lee and Herring show in the 90s.
Oh, Lee and Herring, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they brought him out every week, The Curious Orange. And be like, oh, what are you curious about this week, Curious Orange? And he'd have some obscure thing he was curious about. Anyway, Coney says, it's nice listening to an educational video. I'm just now trying to imagine like it's actually the incorruptible pomegranate, not the incorrigible pomegranate.
He is referencing that pomegranate. Because Semigog remarked about me leaving the pomegranate there, and that it didn't rot; it just dried, and so we called it the incorruptible pomegranate.
The incorruptible, and of course, people are bringing up in the chat the ambivalent onion. We could have like a really shit kind of munch bunch. Coney says it's nice listening to an educational video narrated by properly educated accents, not some overly chippy and condescending northern voice or an over enthusiastic and over the top American one. I quite agree, Coney. Drongo says, wait, they never say how many oyster I should buy.
three pints that he had?
He bought 3 pints of oysters, but that was too many.
3 pints. So... Well, I mean, I was thinking about it because these would not be oysters in the shell. These would have been shucked oyster, or just the oyster. So that is a lot. But I can eat 2 or 3 dozen oysters raw oysters in one go. So.
Do you know what I'm reminded of? Speaking of the Disney's Alice in Wonderland, that as we've just been talking about. And now, oysters, dear, we can begin the feed. And then all the oysters go, feed. And then he eats all the oysters. And the carpenter's in the kitchen, making this soup and like getting all this bread ready. And singing this song. And he comes in and he finds out the walrus has fucking eaten every single oyster. And then he chases the walrus with a hammer. So,
yeah. very
if I was casting that, I would probably cast Panama Hat. He would make a very good walrus, I think. And maybe Columba is the Maybe Columba is a carpenter.
He could be a carpenter.
I think like the carpenter's kind of like, I think Columba and Hat as the walrus and the carpenter would be amazing, with the trucks playing the oysters.
All the truck, all the little trucks in their little voices. Yeah, God's sake. Yes, I... Tuesday, every Tuesday. You're quite correct. By the way, before I forget about it, that film was used in by Adam Curtis in the Pandora's Box series. He made extensive use of clips designed for Dreaming, especially in the title sequence. That film was also used in Michael Moore's Capitalism: A Love Story. Pieces of it are used by watched by Michael Douglas during his physical in The Game. And it's also used in the opening titles of the 2004 Stepford Wives. It was in Peter Gabriel's 1987 single In Your Eyes, in the video for it, in Rush's 1989 music video for Superconductor, a 1989 commercial for the Nintendo Game Boy game Super Mario Land, a 1994 commercial for the Power Macintosh, and during Nine Inch Nails concert performances. So that film gets around, that Design for Dreaming film.
Interesting. So obviously quite a well-known one.
a very well-known.
I mean, it is like curiously high budget for a film like this.
It's curiously high budget, and it's also completely in the public domain. So,
yeah, that's probably one of the reasons.
Yeah.
Makuta Teradax. He is a blast from the past. I've seen him for a while. Makuta, he's almost an Edward Darrah style vintage of Patreon.
I can remember Mrs. AA saying, Makuta Teradax.
Yes, indeed. Along with Christopher Scholwalm and The Ambivalent Onion, who was also in the chat. The Ambivalent Onion is in the chat. We can have like a reunion of like 2017 era Patreon backers, you know.
Yeah, he's doing an Ed Balls by just saying his own name. Yeah.
Anyway, Makuta Teradax says the Corvette advert, and I'm very grateful to those OG backers, by the way, who are still around. Talk about dedication. You know, a lot of people are very fair weather in these spaces, but not Makuta Teradax and the Ambivalent Onion.
It means so much. Oh, also, Makuta Teradax, I believe, is... Do you remember there was a period where he was trying to live off, like, a turnip for, like, a week?
No.
When he was a student, and he had this, like... I think it was him. Pardon me if it wasn't, but I believe I remember tales of him, like, trying to stretch his food budget so that he would just like live off like a potato and a turnip or something, which is of course ironic because someone in Parliament mentioned that people should buy turnips to secure the secure themselves for the coming food shortages, of course, because we're now getting the UK is now getting rationing. And so someone said you should buy turnips, and so there's been a run on turnips, and apparently you can't get them now because they've all been bought up in panic.
Turnips have been bought, I see.
You can't even live on a turnip anymore. So,
anyway, Teradax says the Corvette advert reminds me of the golden bull in the Ten Commandments. Just there's Moses to admonish them. Good point.
There's no Moses there. Right.
Drongo says Sarah was a lesbian.
Huh?
Talking about Sarah from the
Sarah
snob.
Sarah the snob. Yeah.
I still want her to be the cover star. I like Sarah. I think she's the star of this stream. You know.
Yeah, I'm gonna take that shot when the fellow calls her the snob and she makes that face. That's a good one. Lesbian Daria. No, she wasn't a Daria.
I reckon she would have if I had been there, she'd have gone for me. although worryingly, I do also think that she looked like genuinely, I think Sarah the lesbian looked like me when I was that age. So.
Well, she did have a slight, there was a slight masculine overtone to her
lips. Yeah, so the shape of bit like the shape of her nose and the kind of hairstyle that she had.
The eyebrows, yeah.
And the eyebrows. I don't know, she kind of I don't know. She just reminded me of myself.
Yeah, you're a bit more like woolly haired, but
yeah, that's true.
Did you not have a 50s like hair? Did you not?
I very, very briefly went to an old school barber and asked for a DA duck's ass.
Oh, the duck's ass, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like an old, like, he was like an old Teddy boy himself, you know. He had like Elvis stuff everywhere and he was really into it and he did it like properly, immaculately. And, I got home and my ex-wife just immediately messed it up. Immediately.
Oh.
So I had it for like the walk home, essentially.
And that's like, why she's your ex-wife.
So, yeah,
to be fair, it takes a lot of work to maintain that hairstyle. I mean, I have a sort of 50s hairstyle, which I've maintained for a long time. I have my hair's a bit like Morrissey's, you know, used to be.
My hair is not woolly in that kind of it's not like black man hair, you know. It's just
no. It's
But I do have curly hair though. My hair is curly, but it's not. Yeah.
Well, of course it is.
Which is odd because many of my family members, including my dad's side, don't have curly hair. But yes, I do. You for do. Reason, I'm not sure.
You're exactly. the black sheep.
Horowitz, Feinberg, and Horowitz says $25 for the Marvel stream. There we go.
Ah,
and one of the highest earning back catalog streams of all time. Tuesday, FA Tuesday says, AA, when are you going to have a stream about climate change? It seems the Earth's climate has been badly destabilized, especially in the last 7 years.
It hasn't.
What are you talking about?
This is the thing, you know, younger people have really been, a lot of them have been successfully propagandized to feel like changes in the weather are like cataclysmic climactic changes, which most of them aren't. I mean, yes, of course, the Earth has climactic shifts, and it has for all of time, you know. But it's not climate change, TM. You know,
I bought a book by a communist, the Marxist, called Green Capitalism, because I thought it was interesting that a commie had written a book, kind of exposing the money behind, like, Big Green or whatever they call it. I think actually Michael Moore, of all people, made a documentary on this as well, on the kind of climate grift and the money behind it and so on. So if I do anything on it, it will be me reviewing that book. However, when I came to read it, I hadn't read a Marxist, where I forgot just how stupid and retarded Marxists are as well. So
you gotta get reminded of that.
It could be like a kind of double thing where I'm like, oh, good point, Marxist, but also stupid point, etc. Yeah.
So. Well, this is the problem, you know. They could, with just a few shifts, they could be based, but they're not. They're just fucking stupid.
Apparently, I've got shorts that are coming out during the stream. How and why is that happening?
Didn't you set them up to come out? Maybe Timmy is just like releasing them for you.
No, I can see them here. They're all scheduled.
Yeah.
They're not coming out during the stream. I can see them here. Scheduled February the 28th, March the 1st, March the 2nd, March the 3rd.
Don't make it more short.
9 a.m. every day for the next like 40 days or something. Right. Short. I recorded them all in one day, and I might as well just bring them out at this point. So.
Yeah.
But that is fake news. It must be a different one that came out. The one that's from this morning came out this morning. So that is fake news. All right. No, Ashes of Civilization did not just drop. It came out this morning at 9 a.m. You're just getting it now in your feed. People probably, it's just triggered some notification or something. But yeah, it came out this morning. All right, let's get out of here. D, we'll be back tomorrow. What should we do tomorrow night on Unpopular Opinions, I wonder?
Oh, that's even more difficult. Well, I mean, what has happened? Has anything happened?
I might talk about the putting the woke away, because there's been quite a lot of weird, huge... I mean, Scott Adams is a story we could talk about.
Oh, yeah. The Scott
Elon Musk backing Scott Adams up. And even the net negative coming out with kind of, you know...
Hello, fellow white people. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, even... Yeah, so I feel like even though that seems like a meme story, I feel like we should probably talk about that, because there are significant signals, I would say, that some of the woke is being put away. If you look at that. Other than that, I will have a look at the news, and we have to figure out who's going to come on the panel. I think I seem to remember that DOA had booked us off, and was it DOA and Guard? It's kind of random partnership, but
okay.
I don't know. I need to double check, but I remember I was trying to set up a panel last week, and
so we'll have obnoxious British giggling and obnoxious Australian belly,
giggling.
Belly laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so, but I need to double check that. All right.
Can't we just play trivia game? Can't we do that? Can't we return?
Oh, we could do a bit of that, but we need to talk about some topics as well. Yeah, I think the Scott Adams. I do think the Scott Adams one is worth it. We'll have a look at what else is going on as well. All right.
Voices.
Cheers, everybody. Join us again. Remember to buy my courses, of course. I'll also mention, Who Would You Do fans, that the tournament starts tomorrow too. The Who Would You Do parade will be taking place tomorrow night, and then the first round should probably be up sometime after Unpopular Opinions, because it's the 1st of March it starts, which is basically midnight tomorrow night. So
when do I get to nominate new women?
If you want to nominate after the tournament ends, there's a window of about a day or so, and you have to get in your nominations then.
Okay.
Because I'm a friend, I'll nudge you.
Yeah, nudge me.
I'll send you get your nominations in now.
I've got a whole list of women that will lose immediately because of the homosexual you.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Maybe you shouldn't be living here. Get out.